All right. We're going to make a first call here, see if we could see that your lamp. Well, I don't know. We're kind of goofy on lamps here today.
I know. I just.
We like that. Oh.
All right, Josh. Oh. All right.
That would be a treat.
All right. How do I start? Okay, we ready? Mr. Bruce?
Is it, there he is.
Oh, we're almost all ready.
Down at the end, against spot three. So.
We have a full team here. It looks like we're really getting a kickoff here, but while our new board members get settled in, I always kind of start the meeting with a little bit of everything different than what we normally have to go through in life. But it's kind of all about change today, and we have a very special day with our new board members, which we will let them introduce themselves here shortly. Change is happening every moment along the way here for us, and also change with our dear friend Shalom board member Elihu, who will be stepping down after 12 years of his young age. He's ready to go back out skiing and give up the water world. But while we're talking about change, I think if I may offer some suggestions to our new board members, this will change your life. And I have firsthand experience of this. Who would have ever thought when we got on this board that when we have an opportunity to be on the beautiful island of Kona here recently, the last few days, I would get up in the morning and go look for a local paper regarding research voyage collects huge sampling of debris. So my wife's like, okay, you don't read the Wall Street Journal? How in the hell did you find this paper out there? I said, well, I want to know what's going on in our ocean. And the other part is, in our early morning walks on the beach, you know, who would have ever thought years ago that I would be picking up trash on the beach? Jesus, man. My wife's like, we're on vacation. What are you doing walking over the lava over there to pick up that crap over there? I go, Ida, it's just all of a sudden, it will change your life. I'm telling you to. You will pick up trash. So I got a kick out of this one piece because I was picking up some trash and I found a Timex watch, okay? And, you know, back in the Vietnam...
Is it still ticking?
The Vietnam days used to say Timex will keep on ticking or whatever. Well, I don't know. I hope this poor diver's still alive somewhere, but this isn't ticking. So it does change your life. But it also brought me to this revelation, which really and truly, I can't blame trash anymore. Sorry. Love this comment. It's the damn people that are trashing this thing around here. Why are you not picking up your swizzle sticks from a great resort on the sand? I don't understand it. But so I tried to stay calm, but my wife says, please, you're on vacation. You can just let the water board go away. I said, well, we have to come home a day early because we have a new board and all that stuff. So, okay, so we rushed home, and then naturally, airline world is difficult. And so we got in after midnight last night and had to take a taxi to Half Moon Bay. And I think the taxi ride was more frightening than any airline ride I've ever taken in my life. So, and anyway, that was our story. So it will change your life and welcome. And so maybe we'll start with roll call, and we will start with the two new distinguished members, and we'll start with Mr. Kissinger down here. So, welcome. You're welcome to say a few words, and we'll call the roll, Mary, and you could start at that end, please.
Here.
Okay. You.
Here.
Yeah, sorry.
Her voice, I didn't.
Here.
It's about time to get done.
I'm here.
Me?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Here.
Here. So we're all here, and maybe we'll start again. We'll try to get our new board members with a brief introduction, and We welcome you to this wonderful board that has been put together over the years, and we look forward to your participation. But go ahead, sir.
So, Mr. Chairman and members of the board, members of the audience, I'm very pleased to be here today. I wasn't sure that I was going to get here. It took me as long to get out of the town I live in, which is Mill Valley, as it did to get from the Richmond San Rafael Bridge to here. So I can't blame it on East Bay traffic. I think we're in traffic. It's even worse sometimes. My name is Bill Kissinger. I'm an attorney in San Francisco. I specialize in energy work, although earlier in my career I worked as an environmental lawyer, primarily doing a lot of Superfund work, and made occasional appearances before this board, although it's been many, many years at this point. I'm very, very pleased to be here. I spent a number of years working in the federal government during the Clinton administration, and a number of years working for the Davis administration, and was looking very much to get my hands back in government again, which I enjoyed working with very much. So I'm very, very pleased to be here and look forward to working with you all.
Thank you. Board Member Margaret?
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Margaret Abe-Koga, and it's a real honor to be here. I am a city council member from the city of Mountain View, serving my sixth year. Mountain View, we like to call it the heart of Silicon Valley. We're home to companies like Google, Microsoft, Symantec, and I've had the honor to serve my community, and also I've been able to spread out and do some regional work. I serve on our Santa Clara County LAFCO Commission, as well as on the VTA, the Valley Transportation Authority Board, which I chaired last year, and I was really looking forward to expanding my horizon into the water world, and so it's really been an honor to be appointed into. I look forward to the opportunity to serve with all of you. I grew up in on the peninsula, so I actually met Mr. Miller probably 20 years ago. I grew up in San Mateo, and my first job was working for Congresswoman Anna Eshoo. And so just on the other side of the hill is where Mr. John is. So he probably doesn't remember, but I remember meeting him back then. And so it's really great to actually now be here and be able to serve with him and with all of you. So I look forward to this. Thank you.
Board Member McGrath?
I have nothing.
Okay. Well, we'll get to that point later then. Okay, so I'm jumping around on you a little bit. So I think maybe this time would be appropriate to say a couple words about Board Member Shalom Elihu here. And it just is amazing. I just received his book he wrote about himself. And, you know, it's always interesting of these individuals out there that have been around a while, and I haven't had time, but just skimming through it, you think we have a little family history, you know, for one or two or three or five generations. Well, this guy's group started 2,500 years ago, so that's pretty good bit of history, and also goes back to his beginning in Baghdad. He grew up in Baghdad, and so he's had an interesting journey into his life, and we've had opportunities with breakfast in the morning and coffee and lunches and dinners over the years to learn that this individual was, grew up in a tough situation and a tough life, and succeeded everywhere along the way, whether it was selling tea on the streets, correct? To getting a degree in engineering and building a huge engineering firm, and has offered so much history and knowledge to our staff, and challenging our staff also. And I think for our new board members, part of our role is to not only challenge the discharger, but challenge the public, but challenge our staff. And Shalom has done a great job with that. And we're going to give him a little proclamation here in a minute. And on the page 5 of skimming through his new book, I think we should all remember this quote from his mother here. She had an expression that says, excuse me, do not ever tell a lion that his mouth stinks, which means you do not fight or argue with a person stronger than you. Right, Shalom? That was his mother's wisdom to him. And what great advice, really. So I have to remember that because I would never tell my wife her mouth stinks. But she is definitely the lion. So.
Or you don't.
So we're going to get up here and get through this year. It
could be that long delay getting home last night, Shalom, but you know, this is truly an honor for all of us and all who served with you for your exceptional service to this board, Shalom. Since 2000, he's been here and he's brought his engineering experience, and I think another key to good board members is common sense to the work of the board, and he has proudly sought to protect and restore the water quality for the benefits of all Bay Area region residents and emphasize that all parties pursue result-oriented approach to such protection and restoration. Whereas the board and the staff has been privileged and honored to work with Shalom for the protection of our bay. Therefore, be it resolved that this board expresses its thanks to Shalom for a distinguished career for the protection of water quality, adopted the 14th day of November 12th. Shalom. Let's get over here. So we get
Vice Chair, come on up too. We have a long history with Shalom, and well deserved this award here. And for the new board members, after many, many years, this is what you get. Maybe if there's a board chair around, you'll get a tear or two.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. That's a very nice introduction. It has been for me a great experience. Thank you for all board members, staff, really very difficult, and I'm grateful and honored to be able to serve my adopted country.
Yes, now Vice Chair, please.
I'm going to just offer a postscript, which is to offer my personal thanks to Shalom for his service. It has been a pleasure and a real treat to work with you on the board, and also to get to know you as a person, as John just related to you. It's really hard to find a more interesting and thoughtful person than Shalom Eliyahu. And we will miss you very much. We will also probably give you the award, the all-time, long-standing, forever, lifetime award for dispensing the most wisdom with the fewest words. Yes. At the board.
Thank you.
Abraham Singh.
I'd like to say a few words about Shalom. Shalom, I'm going to miss you. You have not only been a great member of this board, but you have taken lead in many things, something like sometimes organizing a Christmas dinner for all of us together, or some also electing the chair for this board meeting. Almost every year you have taken the lead. Besides that, you have made a great contribution. Outside this board, I found you a great gentleman, and I had the pleasure of your companionship even outside the board. You are one of the members out of this membership that once I was running for an election, you came to my election fundraising and you made a contribution. I remember that day, and also I met you some other occasions. And I will be a friend even after you leave this board. But he is living on his own. He resigned from the position. He has served long enough, and he would like to take his time out now. But we will be friends even after you leave this board. Thank you, Shalom, for your service and your friendship. Okay, bye.
Thank you.
Board Member McGrath.
I'll miss you, Shalom. And to Shalom and the new board members, one of the benefits of being on this board, I mean, we are all political appointees. We are governmental officials. We cannot take a position that is separate. But, and that can be, and in many boards is contentious, but that's never been the case here. In all the time that I've been here, I think there's just a handful of votes that were not unanimous, and it is because of the tenor, which Shalom is very much part of it, that we listen carefully to each other, and we make sure that a viewpoint of a member shows up in the final decision. And it's been a pleasure, and Shalom has been a huge part of that. And when he raised an issue, it wasn't just me that listened. It was all of us that listened and made sure that issue was addressed. So I think that's one of the great strengths of this, in addition to the staff, is the respect and the kindness that board members show to each other. And thank you, Shalom.
Thank you.
Very good, board members. And I know Colonel Peacock sends his very best also. We just happened to celebrate, I think, the 142nd year of the Marines anniversary here last Friday.
Oh, no, it was like 200 or 300.
Anyway.
And we were at the black tie event, and we saw Colonel Peacock, and he sent his regards to all of you.
That's right. Well, again, going back to this few days on the Big Island, we at the hotel had a Marine Memorial celebration for that day, and I put my Navy hat on, went down and stood with those Marines. But the General was there, and so I think what's happened to a lot of us veterans, we're all getting a little older. So I don't know how many more Mai Tais those Marines can keep drinking, but they do drink them. So.
We're not near kidding.
So, anyhow, we'll move on to staff, and if you'd like to say a few words.
Well, before some introductions, I do want to, on behalf of staff, say thank you to Shalom, that it's been really an honor for us to be working with you over these past 12 years, and it's something that we always appreciate, your ability to drill down to the salient issues, and with your technical background, you've led us in many respects over the years. So we appreciate that. We're going to miss you, but thank you and Godspeed.
And I believe you have a couple of
introductions. With that, I do have some introductions. I'd like Kevin Lundy to come up and introduce.
We even have uniforms now. I kind of like that, you know. Maybe we'll get some board member uniforms here.
Yeah, something new. So I'm Kevin Lundy, and I work in the Planning Division with the Water Board, and you may remember me. I was just introduced in February or March by Naomi. And I'm here now to introduce two new members that have joined our staff. This is Sarah Turner and Patrick Blanchard, and they are wearing uniforms because it's just a new partnership that we're forming with the AmeriCorps Watershed Stewardship Project, which I'll tell you a little bit about in a moment. But first, I'd like to tell you about Patrick and Sarah. Sarah is originally from Pennsylvania, and she received her bachelor's in environmental science from Colorado College in Colorado Springs. And she has worked with youth teaching environmental education. She has built and restored hiking trails throughout many places in the United States. And she's worked with an NGO to protect water rights from subsurface coal mining. Patrick is originally from Ohio, and he received a bachelor's in science from Northland College in Wisconsin. And he surveyed streams throughout U.S. Forest Service in Oregon. And he taught environmental education issues to youth. And he spent the past year working in Marin County, working with the Golden Gate National Recreation Area. And in that position, he focused restoration efforts on Redwood Creek and Muir Beach, topics that have come up here before. So because Patrick and Sarah have unique positions, hence the uniforms, and because we have two new board members, I just want to take a moment to explain this new collaboration that the Water Board has with AmeriCorps' Watershed Stewardship Project. We've agreed to hire Patrick and Sarah for a 10-month appointment because the mission of our two agencies is so similar. So the mission of the Watershed Stewardship Project is to conserve, restore, and enhance anadromous watersheds for future generations by linking high-quality education and scientific practices. And that's in direct alignment with the Water Board's mission to protect and enhance water quality. And the Watershed Stewardship Project currently has 20 site locations, and we're proud to be one of those. And other site locations range from Ventura all the way up north to the Oregon border. And I'll let you know a little bit about what Patrick and Sarah are doing for us. They've already just started in October, and they've been very busy out in the field. They've assessed flow conditions at over 60 Bay Area streams so far so that we can classify them as perennial or non-perennial. In the winter, they will assist water board staff with monitoring stormwater mercury concentrations to evaluate the effectiveness of TMDL implementation measures. As the fish start moving in these streams, they will work with local partners to assess spawning and rearing habitat in Pescadero Creek, Napa River, and Lagunitas Creek, to name a few. And in the spring, they'll work with the Surface Water Ambient Monitoring Program's Region 2 staff to survey streams using the Swamp Bioassessment Protocol and physical habitat measures. And that work will help support the BASMA Regional Monitoring Coalition, which is a group of permittees that have gotten together to fulfill monitoring requirements under the Phase 1 NPDES permit. Patrick and Sarah will also teach watershed-based education curriculum to elementary school students, and they'll conduct their own independent service project where they get a group of volunteers, manage and train them, and carry out a one-day restoration project. So you can see it's an ambitious agenda they have ahead of them. It's only 10 months that we have the ability to work with them, but we're really looking forward to it. So I wanted to welcome them to the Water Board.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome. Yep, board member.
Hi. Before you go, I'm really excited about this, and for any number of reasons, and I would ask that you sit down with your two interns here, with Phil Stevens of the Urban Creeks Council, and make sure that you guys are on the same page. I did recruit Phil to be a board member at the Estuary Institute because of the importance of trying to set priorities and realize what we can and can't do with our urban streams. So field work is just unbelievably exciting, and I think you would all benefit from sitting down and having coffee or lunch. So,
thank you.
Congratulations on your volunteerism, and hopefully you throw them a few crumbs to buy their gas once in a while too, guys.
Oh yeah. Also, I'd like to take a moment just to introduce our new scientific and seasonal aides as part of this year's budget. We have change in how we deal with what we've historically called temporary help or student help, and so we've been able to hire a number of folks at less than full time to work with us and assist, and so not knowing their schedules, how all they would be able to show up, I'd like all of our new hires in the scientific seasonal aid and such to stand up and just from where you're sitting, introduce yourself and say which division you're working with. So.
My name is Marissa Van Dyke, and I'm working in the Watershed Management Division.
Hi, my name is Abhay. I work with the Groundwater Protection Division.
Great. And we have a total of 11 who are working with us over the course of this year. So we'll keep you posted on the work they're doing. And that sums up our introductions for this month.
Very good. We will move on to item two, the public forum at this time. And I have three cards from the same area, so we'll start with Mr. Chang first. Come forward, and then I believe Gary Latshaw to follow, and Tim Brand. 1, 2, 3.
Hi, my name is Perry Chen. I'm the Cupertino City Council member, but I'm here to representing Bay Area for Clean Environment Base Group. I'm not representing the City Council. I'm here to asking you to please join Sierra Club to file AMICA brief, because Sierra Club is suing the Lehigh Southwest Cement Plant, the number one polluter in South Bay, especially the mercury to the bay. You know, last time I attended Bay Area Air Quality Management District was 33% of their stationary source from that cement plant, much higher than their refinery. So the water they have been polluting to a permanent degree, you know, illegally dumping selenium about 12 times higher than the federal maximum limit. Federal maximum limit is 5 microgram. And on their own report, Lehigh's own report, is 60 to 80 microgram to the water. And then the water going underground aquifer, and then the people live nearby, Lasoto Hill people and Mountain View people, do drink those water. Okay. It took me 2.5 years to find out is that water mixed up with the underground aquifer or not from waterfall, from Santa Clara Valley Water District. It's very frustrating. All the supervising agency supposed to do their job, and as a city council, after I get into the government, I find out most of them are not doing their job, except the water board here. You guys doing a fantastic job, give them the notice of violation and try to enforce it all. The county is totally mess. Okay, I hate to say that, but this is a situation that just give the public safety, public welfare away for the foreign country-owned corporations' profit. And we are all paying this, you know, the whole entire area, the air pollution, the water pollution, and this is the only cement plant so close to so popular area. And you're talking about right next to city of Cupertino, Silicon Valley. And we all know Silicon Valley is the economic engine for the, not only for this region, for the state, for the country. And then we are allowing this polluter continue to pollute. I just cannot understand. And that's why I'm here to asking you to please help join Sierra Club to file the amicus brief on that Sierra Club lawsuit on the selenium, please. Thank you.
Thank you. Whichever speaker would like to go next, your call.
All right. My name is Gary Latshaw. I am a volunteer with the local Loma Prieta's Sierra Club, chapter of the Sierra Club, which is the chapter that involves the Permanente Creek. And I am basically here to ask you to join with the Sierra Club in pursuing this matter. The creek, Permanente Creek, is listed as an impaired body of water. There's been numerous measurements where the values have exceeded the four-day average in the Federal Clean Air or Clean Water Act of 5 micrograms per liter. There's actually one set of four daily taken that are in the mid-20s. The accusation from Lehigh that the pollution is from elsewhere is pretty bogus. There's two streams, two branches of the creek. The other branch, which doesn't go by the plant, has had measurements about 1 microgram per liter, and then a few measurements above where the plant is also around 1 microgram. So clearly something happens when this water goes by the plant. So please help us. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Tim Brand. I'm from Cupertino, and I represent the nonprofit group called Bay Area for Clean Environment. Your mission statement begins by saying, the mission of the regional board is to develop and enforce water quality objectives and implementation plans that will best protect the state's waters. Every Saturday for the last 3 weeks, I've helped gather signatures for our petition. I stood next to a footbridge that crosses Permanente Creek, and I would say something like, excuse me, miss, did you know that the creek you just crossed is polluted with selenium? It is designated as an impaired waterway by the EPA because it's 8 to 12 times over the legal selenium limit. And Lehigh Cement is currently illegally pumping wastewater into it from their open pit mine, which is just over that ridge. This violates the Federal Clean Water Act, and we need your signature to help them stop them from doing this. And a typical response would be, if it's illegal, how come they are still allowed to do it? So I show them excerpts from the Sierra Club's lawsuit or water board letters to Santa Clara County, which are quite convincing, and people are incredulous that enforcement should require a lawsuit or a petition. They universally expect enforcement of the law to be a standard operating procedure. Those of us working on this issue are encouraged by your efforts and letters, but dismayed by the state of Permanente Creek, and ask that you pursue your mission with vigor. We've gathered 777 signatures over the last 3 weeks. People really care about this issue, and I'll read you the text. It's very short. Permanente Creek, which flows through Rancho San Antonio Park, is a natural treasure that should not be polluted. Unfortunately, the creek does not meet water quality standards for selenium and chronic toxicity due to unpermitted pollutant discharges from Lehigh Southwest Cement Company immediately upstream from the park. We support the efforts of the Regional Water Quality Board and the Sierra Club to protect Permanente Creek. We urge both the Regional Water Board and the Sierra Club to work together to obtain a federal court order that requires Lehigh to stop its illegal pollution of Permanente Creek as soon as possible. So I'd like to deliver this to you, and thank you very much for letting me speak today.
A public forum, Dr. Singh, will have staff comment regarding. So I think that'd be best. I think there's some legal things coming down, and so go ahead, Dr.
The gentleman asked.
Can I give you someone this? Thank you.
Okay. Well, our sound system, number one, but if you notice our great old state building and Prop 30 passed, so they should be able to adjust the clocks too eventually. we're still on an hour, whatever, so
yeah.
Don't go by that time. So staff...
It didn't mean we fixed things. It just meant we avoid the next round of cuts.
Right.
So staff...
we're lucky to still have a clock.
Can brief the board in the near future on an update on where we are with...
Yeah, I will note that as the parties brought up, this is an enforcement item. In this case, we have separated our staff functions on this. I'm advisor to the board on this item. Diane is head of the staff's prosecution team, and so even though this is an enforcement item, I'll let her say a word or two about what's going on.
Diane White here, Assistant Executive Officer, for the record. I'll just add that I am leading up the enforcement investigation associated with this facility. We have issued a number of NOVs that are on the record, and we're following up on those. It's something that I'm coordinating with our five divisions in-house, given that there's a number of issues out there in relation to soil, groundwater, surface water, industrial stormwater runoff. So we have an ongoing investigation. I am closely coordinating that with the EPA. So that's sort of a quick summary of our ongoing effort. I'll also ask reference for the record that there is a pending permit application for an NPDES permit for the Lehigh facility. They're currently covered under the sand and gravel permit, and we are requiring them essentially to move over to an individual NPDES permit so that we can more closely regulate discharges from this facility, and so we will also be bringing that back to you for consideration. The gentlemen were also referencing a Sierra Club suit, which is a suit that's been filed independently by the Sierra Club against Lehigh for their activities, and we have provided the Sierra Club with all our in-house documents and everything that is currently publicly available for them at this time.
Thank you. Final card, public forum, Craig Johns, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the board. First, I'd like to take a moment to both welcome the new board members, and as the chair earlier stated, your time on the board your lives will be changed. As a former member of this board, many years ago it seems like now, I think I can credit my service on the board and the folks that I met and the issues that I engaged in that's causing me to leave the practice of law. So for that, I'm thankful. I would also...
Don't take that seriously, Bill. That still pays your bills.
I should also like to take just a moment, too, to both congratulate and thank Shalom for his many years of service to the board. It's been a pleasure working with you, Shalom, and your contributions, not just to the board and the board members and advice to the staff, but also to water quality protection in the Bay Area has been extremely significant. And for those of us on the other side of the dais, we appreciate your service. I'm going to move on to the purpose of why I'm here today, and it's to provide an update on an item that we appeared before. By the way, my name is Craig Johns, and I'm here on behalf of the Partnership for Sound Science and Environmental Policy. You have my card with the address. And this has to do with the trash reduction strategies that the board and with the MS4s in the Bay Area have been working on. I want to hand out two items that to the board members, which I've provided copies to the staff. And for the benefit of the folks in the audience, to the extent that they care, these two items, one is an article from the San Jose Mercury News dated November 1, and the second one is attachment A from the environmental impact report that was done by the city of, or excuse me, the county of San Mateo, supporting its reusable bag ordinances. The reason that I'm here today to speak on this is because 2 months ago, when we had this a workshop or information item before the board, one of the comments that I made on behalf of our organization was a concern that many of the communities in the Bay Area are assuming, because of the trash reduction proposal that was submitted by BASMA, that there was going to be a very robust credit opportunity for cities who adopt certain ordinances that ban plastic bags and other types of trash. And there was a lot of colloquy at the board meeting 2 months ago on that. I won't belabor that here. But just to underscore the comments that I made, the concern that communities are going to move forward on these ordinances banning certain types of trash, assuming they're going to get credits in order to comply with the MS4 trash reduction obligations, when the board has not formally codified what those credits are going to be. The Mercury News article, one of the two items that I handed out in that red box there, and I'm quoting here, it says, "Measuring just how much trash goes into the local water is not easy or an exact science, so the board is giving cities credit for making policy-related efforts toward the 40% reduction goal. A plastic bag ban is the most appealing option, as it would get the city a whopping 12 points of credit toward the 40% threshold." So whether that's accurate reporting or not, at least the perception in the community out there is that this board has approved these very robust trash reduction credits if they adopt these bans. Turning to the second item that I handed out, which is the attachment from the CEQA document, and this is just an excerpt. It's pages 5 and 6. The key part here is on page 6. It says, and this is the CEQA findings of facts that supported the county ordinances ordinance that was adopted a few weeks ago by the county of San Mateo. It says emphatically that the county of San Mateo will receive a 10% reduction credit for the ordinance adoption. So, again, I think it's important for this board to at some point make a statement to the communities in the Bay Area whether or not you're going to give the kinds of credits that the BASMA report suggested that they would be receiving, because you're going to have more and more communities adopting these kinds of things. And on the 3rd of December, the city of San Jose will be considering a same type of an ordinance, and it's my understanding that staff is moving this ordinance forward with the expectation that there are going to be credits that will be available and provided to the community. So if the board is inclined to perhaps send a letter or ask staff to send a letter or something to the city of San Jose saying you can adopt this if you wish, if you think it's good public policy, but just don't assume that you're going to get the credits, because the board as a policy matter has not taken that up formally and decided what those credits are going to be, if any. And that would be something that our organization would support. I thank you for the opportunity to be here. I would like to say we have been working with your staff, and I think we're going to be meeting with Dr. Mumley later in the month of November to talk more about this issue. And we do appreciate staff's willingness to continue to meet with us and try to answer any questions that you may or may not have.
Thank you, Craig. Vice Chair?
Yeah, I just... Given these comments and given the extensive discussion that we had 2 months ago, I think it was 2 months ago on the trash item, also given the fact that since that board meeting, the cities have submitted their reports to us, which we didn't have access to.
Annual reports.
I think it might be appropriate at the next board meeting, perhaps, to have a briefing on and an update on this issue, perhaps in the executive officer's report. And of course, we, given our great confidence in staff, we are confident that you will be communicating to the cities as, you know, as is appropriate during the interim between this and the next board meeting.
Yeah, we can report back on our progress since September and update you on the findings through the annual reports. So we can do that December or January, depending on how it fits.
Yeah. Board member.
Bruce, I would assume that Craig's organization would support the necessary and the proper balance between spending enough resources on monitoring so we can have a body of information to assess what nexus there is between the regulatory measures and their effectiveness, but also recognizing that we're never going to have enough data to have a perfect nexus, so it has to be a reasonable related. And I would assume from the name of your organization that you would support the necessary science to support us spending our resources on the right things. So if we could have in your report a little bit of kind of what the state of the knowledge is and what the staff at least thinks the balance between monitoring and credit, so we don't get wildly outside of the nexus, but we also don't seek a perfect match and over expenditure of monitoring resources on something that will, you know, where we'll end up chasing our tail. So,
right, we can include that and update you on that.
And then there would be an opportunity for Craig to come in at that time, and we'll get to
Certainly.
See another really nice tie.
thank you very much.
Thank you. Again, just quickly, I mean, the front pages today and then in the next couple of days are all on cap and trade, and so let them stay on the front page with there. So maybe trash and trade can not be on the front page somewhere along the way there. So there's the expert down there on the end on the cap and trade world, right?
We already have our cap. We adopted that one in our last permit. So I will stay silent right now on the trade.
All right, very good. So I think we're done with public forum, and we will move on to item 3, the minutes of the October 2011 meeting. And since there was no quorum at that meeting, technically...
Right, I will say that technically that's a summary of the meeting, because there was not an official meeting since we were not able to put a quorum together on that. So there's no action necessary because since the meeting officially didn't take place, there's no need to adopt minutes. But we did want to have a summary, partially because also on those that summary page, there's new information on how the public can get information on what happened at board meetings, that we're updating our contact information there. So no action is necessary on that.
Very good. Legal team, Yuri, did you want to make a comment on that? Okay, so we can move on from that and go on to board member and executive officer's report. And, oops, state's falling apart here. Thank all our guests and staff for their patience this morning. It's kind of a lengthy start here, but we'll get going. First off, it's been a very, very busy month for everyone regarding in October here with our WQCC, and we all rushed and jumped in earlier at night and early morning to get to Sacramento and to the Delta, and I'll let all our fellow board members make comments there. I did get up there late on the 31st, and then on the 1st we had a good session with all the regions in the state there and a lot of new board members, and the reappointment of some of the longer-term board members have not come through yet, but hopefully it will come through soon. A lot of emphasis was put on our Great Delta, and speaking of that, our board liaison from the state, Tam, is at a Delta hearing again today with our former board member, Steve. So the Delta world was there. I think we're all looking at kind of the same directions from every region, in my opinion, on what we're all trying to do. And again, I will say the trash issue is very, very, very serious and very important to all the regions in the state and how we can work through those things. So our region commented regarding just about what every other region's doing, but I think more so we stepped up, Vice Chair, by bringing up emerging contaminants and sea level rise and some of these things that other regions haven't even thought about. But I think we kind of maybe shocked them into thinking that this region is trying to move forward on some of these issues that are very complex, but we're working very hard on that. And I will turn it over to the vice chair who did the tour and rode in buses and cars and trains, planes, and automobiles to get through that beautiful delta of ours. So go ahead, Vice Chair.
Thank you. I have that to report on and three additional items, and I'll try to be pretty brief. As the Chair mentioned, we, as part of this coordinating meeting among all of the regional board members across the state, we highlighted our work, attempts to work on trash, and our contributions to the emerging contaminants issues, as well as many of the other things that we've been doing here in the region that we're very, very proud of. We did find that there are a lot of shared issues that we have with other regions, but there are also quite a number of situations in which we either have our own unique problems or else we take a unique approach to the problem. So it was a very informative meeting, and the communication went in all directions. The Delta tour that happened the day before Shalom and I were on, and it was a very interesting tour. The State Board took great pains not to tell us anything that we couldn't talk about, which I think wrapped them up in knots for months beforehand, but they did a very nice job of that. We saw we saw a lot of the engineering structures that are constructed in the Delta and planned for the Delta, particularly with the peripheral tunnel or whatever it is we're calling. What struck me, and I'm sure Shalom will add his thoughts, was that at times in the Delta tour we were going through an environment that looked just fabulous. I mean, it's the Delta is a rich, wonderful resource where you have a lot of ecological value. And then 10 minutes later, we'd be going along a dike looking at riprap from the Corps of Engineers, and the person sitting next to me, who shall remain nameless, said, "Oh, my God, this is just an ecological desert." You know, so it was a study in contrasts, but I think we learned a lot about the functioning of the water system of California, and it was very useful. With the Chair's permission, I'll go ahead and talk about three other things that I need to report on since the last board meeting. Just before and just after the last board meeting, when we had the item on the trash baseline that went on for quite a while, as Craig mentioned, I did meet with Paul Cingarella and Mark Gray, who represent the sort of disposable food servingware industry, with Craig Johns and his guest Ryan Kenny from the American Chemistry Council on the issue of the plastic bags and credits for plastic bags. I met with the staff of Save San Francisco Bay, including David Lewis, Allison Chance, and Stephen Knight, and also with Ian Wren of Baykeeper. And I did find that the concerns of these disparate groups on this one issue were remarkably similar and had to do with their perceived inappropriateness of the crediting system that was being proposed. And we had a long and very informative discussion about that. I did with each of those groups. The other message that they wanted to get across was that the direct monitoring approach is doable currently with and with a consistent methodology. The discussion actually mirrors all of the comments that were given by those groups at the board meeting, either just before or just after my meetings with them. Okay, I'm on number three. I'll try to get there fast. On September 20, I attended a meeting of the ABAG Executive Committee, and it featured a presentation by Athena Honore of the San Francisco Estuary Partnership on the Coastal Regional Sediment Management Plan. I just saw Jim sit up about 3 inches higher. It affects the San Francisco to Pacifica coastline. The issue is coastal erosion, where we lose sand that we want at the nice bathing beaches or surfing beaches, and it gets deposited where we don't want it in ports and bays, and then we have to deal with it as a potential dredging or shipping issue. The approach is to create a work group of local, state, and federal officials who will work in consult with a consultant. In this case, it is ESAPWA, which is a company that I'm sure you're all familiar with, that is fairly expert in utilizing the natural hydrogeomorphical processes to restore and maintain nature's services, in this case, including coastal shorelines. They're more well-known for inland work. It's a non-regulatory approach. I know that the Water Board staff is familiar with it, but they're trying to get all of the cities and all of the affected parties to come up with, and you're nodding your head, Margaret, because you may have been involved, to come up with a coordinated approach towards this regional problem so that everyone will be on the same page in trying to deal with this issue. So the report of the consultant and the group comes back to the executive committee of ABAG in late 2013. So we'll be looking forward to that. And also at the ABAG executive committee meeting, they passed out a book that was produced with ABAG funding, that's produced by the Coastal Conservancy, that is really a fabulous book. I recommend it to all of you. It's about the San Francisco Bay shoreline and how you can, as a member of the public, access it at different points, what facilities are available, where you park, what you can do once you get there. And I am just so delighted because I actually got a perk for attending all these meetings. I got a free copy, and you guys have to buy your own. But it's down below the limit, so I'm not going to declare it.
Right.
All right. Last thing, we also had the Regional Monitoring Program annual meeting during this two-month period where they distributed the Pulse of the Delta. We didn't have a Pulse of the Bay book this year, but we did have an extensive report on the results of the Regional Monitoring Program, and especially for you two new board members, you know, if you have any trouble sleeping at night or whatever, it's great, you know, it's great reading. It's actually very nicely written and showed.
I have given them a copy.
You're way ahead of me. And just to continue the theme of contaminants of emergent concern, we also had a nice presentation from Meg Sedlak once again about the work on these contaminants. And I was actually glad to hear that some of the NOAA Muscle Watch work is being repurposed to monitor these CECs, and they even include some nanomaterials in the analytes that they're looking for in Muscle Watch, which kind of amazed me. So on that note, that's my board report. Thank you very much for your time.
So board members, new board members, don't get scared with the vice chair. She is just an absolute jewel to the environment for the Bay Area, trust me. And I wanted to mention earlier, don't get scared of the 12 pounds of paperwork you received for this meeting also. It could get bigger, and we don't know if we'll ever have an iPad or whatever. I don't think so, but we'll move it down. Since we were talking a little bit about sediment, we'll run down to Board Member McGrath, please.
Well, I'm not going to repeat anything that Terry said. I will mention that this year's Water Quality Coordinating Committee was, from my perspective, the most interesting and relevant since my tenure. Really well organized and really topical in terms of the challenges of the Delta, which aren't the same as we perceived them when we last had a peripheral canal project. Things are very different, and the pursuit of the new legislation is a very complex issue, and there's a lot of very good work being done on that. So I do believe I went to graduate school with a Coastal Commission staff person working on the ABAG study, and of course I worked on the West Side Transport when I was a Coastal Commission staffer, which is put in harm's way clearly as sea level rises, and so there are some very difficult challenges. But I wanted to give the board a brief report on the work that I've been doing poking around with strategic planning. I've interviewed 8 different people specifically about the strategic direction. There were people like Loretta Barsamian and Alexis Strauss and various boards and dischargers and interest groups, and then tried to collect that into a kind of a summary that I've provided to Bruce and that is available as a public document. I was trying to do it and kind of finish at least my analysis to jibe with our effort at triennial review and try to make sure that that they were coordinated, and also to tee up a few issues for board consideration as we try to integrate the new board and try to grapple with what we may not have resources to do but may be important and have a discussion about that. I want to thank the people that gave so generously of their time. They enabled me to see things that I can't see from where I sit. All of them prepared very well. I gave them questions that the board had discussed back. It was either in March or April, and they gave a lot of thought to it. So in addition to those issues which do show up in the triennial review, and that was very heartening, let me just run quickly through those issues that I think are teed up. First, there's the question of enforcement, since EPA, the Water Board, and public citizen attorney generals like the Baykeeper all have a role. Should there be some efforts to try to coordinate that and make sure that we're focusing on priority issues? Another issue is, as the aging workforce in governmental organizations, are we looking at succession planning, and are we preparing for what the future leadership of our staff needs to be? The third thing, I think we need to think about infrastructure more holistically. The reform legislation on California water did talk about developing local water supplies, and I think the Bay Area is substantially behind some of the Southern California areas in that. We've done a little bit of that, but I would not be surprised if sometime in the next 5 or 6 years there's more infrastructure investment in terms of stimulation of the economy, and I think we need to think about what we need to be prepared. Fourth, I think it's important to have the State Board and Cal EPA and the Regional Board all aligned into strategic direction and priorities. Another issue is maybe increasing the number of workshops rather than straight hearings to increase the opportunity for the public to be heard, and perhaps to give the staff some support in their ongoing negotiations with dischargers where that might be appropriate. We need to highlight, I think, green chemistry, as I said, local water supply. We talked a little bit at the WQCC about reducing the level of effort for renewal of NPDES permits, but I also note that there are important issues that do come up and get triggered only through those renewals, so we can't do that too far. And then just on the sediment issue, the question, should we update dredging and other policies to reflect what we know now about the deficit of sediment? So these are not in any particular order or things that I expect to be high priorities, just kind of a parking lot for the various issues that we should discuss as a board and figure out how to discuss with the board and the staff. So, and the final note, the San Diego Regional Board has been working on a draft strategic plan. So there are different models out there. I didn't try to summarize those. But I think trying to have the new board members and the existing board members and the staff kind of kick around what our priorities should be is I think, a very important step, and we'll have to figure out as a group how best to do that.
Thank you, Jim. Board Member Abekova? Shalom?
Yes, Delta Tour, I took the Delta Tour. I don't have anything else to add, only to say that really they are amazing engineering structures, huge, huge pumps. I haven't seen anything like that before. And then one more thing is I took the Bay Bridge tour on construction. That was really also very interesting. I asked about the stormwater. They take care of that. I think it's under control.
And we kind of pick on those Southern California folks all the time about this Delta thing, but not a lot of that water gets to Southern California. We do use a little of it in the Bay Area, thank goodness. But anyway, board member Singh?
I'd like to keep my comments brief, but let me first of all congratulate John Mueller for his great election again to mayor or vice mayor of Half Moon Bay. I mean, there is one victory in our column. Secondly, I regret that I wanted to have the Delta tour and I never missed the Sacramento meeting, but due to indisposition, something happened to me, flu like, I could not attend the meeting. I have a brief comment. You know, I was wondering that you were talking about trash, and you know, I was looking at the news. And the Giants won. That was a great news. The World Series, and the World Champion. But what do they do with all the papers on the streets of San Francisco? I mean, they drop so much trash over there. Man, must have been a Herculean task to clean up the street. But more than that, the Superstorm Sandy. And I was looking at the devastation of the towns after towns, and I was going in the pictures over there, and what a trash problem they have on the East Coast. Mane, you are trying to clean up trash over here, and I was wondering that how those people are going to deal with that. Mane, sometimes thoughts comes to my mind that we have been talking about trash for some time, but sometimes the nature can do such a overwhelming job. And by the way, the superstorm Sandy also can change the opinion of people. 35% of people have started to believe in climate change, and 15% firmly believed and voted against Romney for that reason, I heard. So whatever the reason, I'm not repenting who won or who lost, but I'm thinking that this October surprise did a change in the landscape, in my opinion. But let me make a... I would like to bring to your attention, I don't know that, first of all, cap and trade is now a law over here. And let's see, one watch how it operates and what benefits we derive from it. Secondly, the budget of California is now balanced. And hopefully the staff cuts over here, and we have been paying in our staff over here, will go away. I don't know, maybe Bruce will be able to make some comment about that. Maybe we will benefit from that. When we always talk about a staff cut and all the problem we had. One thing, I had a Mercury news about a week or so ago. The CEQA was being used by some of the businesses for cutting down the competition, to eliminating the competition to their advantage, by delaying the legitimate project. And there was a big comment about that. I don't want to make any comment pro and con about that. But I don't know if you noticed that. And there was a comment over there, an editorial over there by San Jose Mercury News, that they need to reform CEQA so that it is not misused by the people for their personal gains. So that's my comment for today. Thank you.
Thank you. Board Member Kissinger?
Nothing for me.
Yeah, just quickly back to this great work that Board Member McGrath's doing. Maybe we could all start to work on a date in January, some rainy day, a little bit of strategic planning offsite. I have a location in mind if I'm still around, and that would be a good start. And along that line, Board Member Singh and myself have another 2 weeks, and then we could be history here also. So who knows what's going to happen with the governor's office. But I'd like to look forward to that. And then along that line, a new contact list, but no use to do a contact list until we really know who the contacts are here in the next couple of weeks, because November 28th is a drop-dead deadline.
We're still going to want to find you.
Okay. So, anyway, We'll go back to Executive Officer's report, please.
Yeah, just a few items. Yes, I'll follow up to see what we can schedule for January. We are doing getting information together on an updated contact list, so we'll get you that. Board Member Singh brought up the budget issue. Prop 30 passing is at one level a benefit to us, but the budget for this fiscal year essentially had already been established with the expectation that Prop 30 would pass. So really the benefit to us is that we won't have further cuts in the weeks before the election. State Department of Finance was contacting the State Board to find out information on what level of general funding we still had, and I think they were snooping around to try to determine what might be the potential for further cuts should Prop 30 not pass. At this point, statewide, the State Board system is less than 10% general funded, so to a certain degree, over the past 6 or 8 years, there's been a shift, which was explained at WQCC, of general funds predominantly into fee-funded programs. And so not to say that we're insulated by any of the broader budget issues, but we're much, much less beholden to each annual ebb and flow of the budget than we were some years back. So predominantly the sources now are our fees on waste dischargers. We still get a certain amount of funding from US EPA, and we also have most of our cleanup work through the site cleanup program and through the Department of Defense. That's cost recovery. In other words, we get reimbursed for the time we spend overseeing those cleanups. And so as I say, less than 10% is general funded at this point. A few other items. In the October and November reports, there were a number of instances that we were reporting on site cleanups. The railroad yard in Richmond, Votech site out on Point Mulati in Richmond, the removal of material down on the Oakland Estuary, and also the United Technologies site up in the hills above San Jose, all significant cleanups, the most visible of which was probably the smallest of them, which was site on the estuary, which was cycling back to an old fuel terminal that had not been properly cleaned up, and now there was the need to go back and remove soil that was right at the edge of the estuary to keep that from seeping into the bay, and also to minimize the potential for vapors to get into the residents there. That's something, there still is work needing to be done to protect on the vapor intrusion, and we'll report back to you on the progress there. But that did generate some press because it was visible, but it does remove a significant source of potential fuel, residual fuels getting into the Oakland Estuary. So we're pleased that finally moved forward. I'll also note it wasn't expressly spelled out in the Executive Officer's report. A couple events over the last couple of months relative to our ongoing work to restore salt ponds and tidal marsh around the bay margin. In the middle of October, there was essentially a dedication of a renewal between the Army Corps of Engineers and the State Coastal Conservancy to work on the ongoing restoration of North Bay salt ponds, and that Army Corps of Engineers is going to be providing a variety of assistance in there, including levee construction and work to promote the restoration of ponds up there. Also on October 31st, we had an event down in Alviso to both celebrate the 40th anniversary of the establishment of the Don Edwards San Francisco Bay National Wildlife Refuge, and at the same time have a breach of another pond in the South Bay. This was the pond known as A-17, Alviso 17, breach of a pond of about 130 acres, and that was a result of an action this board took back last spring to modify our order over the South Bay salt pond restoration program to allow the adaptive management to address the change in plans, which recognized that that pond would be an appropriate one to breach for establishing tidal marsh. And so bit by bit, progress is being made throughout the whole region. It's an ongoing process. The item we have on the uncontested calendar for Montezuma is part of this larger picture, but there's progress being made throughout. I'll stop it there.
Very good. Thank you. Yes, Vice Chair.
Yeah, I had one comment on the executive officer's report, and it has to do with the Prop 84 stormwater funding. Part of the report said that BASMA, working with the regional board and others, was able to get a Prop 84 grant to work on various aspects of stormwater, one of which includes trash monitoring protocols. And first of all, I should say, you know, kudos to the staff for making this happen, because I guess it wasn't at all clear at the outset whether this was going to be considered an appropriate use of Prop 84 funds. But my concern at the moment is that part of the money was designated to develop trash monitoring protocols, and given the testimony and discussion that we had 2 months ago, and the fact that there is a live continuing issue on just exactly how the monitoring protocols are going to be developed and codified and approved by this board, I was just wanting to note that I'm hoping, and I'm sure that the staff will work closely with BASMA to try to make sure that this money, new money, is used to create the system that we want to be able to approve in terms of the trash monitoring program, rather than one that we will have difficulty approving. I read the proposal that was funded, and it is sufficiently broad that the money could be used either way. So I just wanted to mark that for the staff's attention. Thank you.
We'll keep the board posted as we move forward with that contract.
Thank you.
All right, very good. We will go to swearing in. Again, thanks for the patience, but it's been a couple of months since we've been able to get after all this good stuff now. So at this time, we'll do swearing in. All relevant evidence that any person desires to be considered by this board must be introduced at this hearing, first by the board staff, second by the discharger, third by public agencies, and fourth by any other interested persons. The board and board counsel may ask questions to clarify the testimony of a witness at any time. Cross-examination of any witnesses by others will be allowed following completion of direct testimony by all persons. Each person testifying will commence by stating his or her name, whom he or she represents, and whether he or she took the oath to tell the truth. The hearings will not be conducted according to technical rule of evidence. The board will accept any evidence or testimony that is reasonably relevant to the issues. All board files, exhibit, and agenda materials pertaining to this matter will be made part of the record of this proceeding. Additional written material will be made part of the record at the discretion of the board. Those wishing to testify in the hearing will now rise or raise their hand, please. Do you promise to tell the truth?
Yes, so do.
Thank you very much. So at this time, we will go to the uncontested calendar, and maybe we'll get legal staff to give us a little update on board members. Do we need any recusals or comments, or we're pretty clear to move forward?
It's my understanding none of the board members will be recusing themselves, so if we could take each item one at a time to do a vote, there are a couple of abstentions. Thank you.
Very good.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I actually do need to recuse myself from one item on the agenda. It's the GWF matter, item 5.
Okay. Are they? Okay. You guys are all straight on everything, or would you like to comment, Yuri? You're good. All right. The main thing is, Bill, we want our legal team to be good with all of us, right? Their job is to keep us out of trouble.
Amen.
That's right.
Vice Chair, did you have a comment? Or
I'll jump in and make a recommendation on the calendar. I will note of the items on there that technically 5F is a report. It is not an action item, so consideration of the calendar would not include that. You do have a supplemental for item 5C. We've made a minor wording change in the fact sheet relative to 5C. I'm not aware that you have any cards for any of the other items.
Not on uncontested.
So I would recommend then that we vote on, I'd recommend adoption of items 5B, C, D, E. Could vote on that, and then we can come back and vote on 5A separately.
If we could leave D off of that list.
Okay. We will. I recommend recommend adoption of 5B, C as supplemented, and E.
What D we are going to postpone?
So we will A and D. We will come vote back on, to
vote on separately.
I move. Okay. I second it then.
It's been moved and seconded for...
On items B, D, and
excuse
E.
Excuse me, B, C e. as supplemented, and E.
C as supplemented, and E. Mr. Chair, I did just want to make a comment.
Sure.
On item... Which one is it? 5B, which is the Sausalito Marin City Sanitary District NPDES permit. I noted that both of the parties commented on an issue that concerns Table 8, which is basically the list of things that we are going to require and when we are going to require them. In terms of specific tasks to reduce blending, I noticed that it seemed that most, or actually all, of the dates that we gave, specific dates for compliance, had to do with the submission of work plans rather than the completion of particular tasks. Looking more and being directed by our executive officer to look further into the staff report as to how all of the EPA tasks and the state and the regional board tasks kind of intermesh, I feel comfortable voting for this. But I did want to just note for staff that I really like it when we have dates on tasks instead of just dates on work plans, or else dates on work plans that require EO approval, so that we have a little bit less jello on the wall in some of these requirements. But I'm convinced now that we have a good plan for item 5B after being sort of walked through it by our executive officer, and I appreciate that. Thank you.
Noted, staff. Thank you for bringing that up. I just want to make a brief comment about 5B also, that, this little special part of the world over there has been in the news on and off over the last few years, and I think they've come a long way, baby, and I know they've spent a lot of money and a big investment, and a lot of hard work is going into it, and it definitely is giving them... some hope out there that they see a little light at the end of the tunnel, and even though it's uncontested, I congratulate them for the hard work, and I know their team and Monica has done a great job on this permit for them, so I have no other comments on that unless anyone else does, so we're back to a motion and a second on 5B, C, and E.
Correct.
And at this time, we'll call for a roll call vote, please, Mary.
Board Member Ogden.
Aye.
Board Member Galeazzo?
Aye.
Board Member Kissinger?
Aye.
Board Member McGrath?
Aye.
Board Member
Singh?
Aye.
Vice Chair?
Aye.
Chair Miller?
Aye. So ordered. And now we will go back to...
I recommend adoption of 5A, and noting that Board Messenger Kissinger will be recusing on that.
Move adoption.
Second.
Any other further comments on 5A? If not, roll call vote, please, Mary. On 5A.
Aye.
Board Member Elliott.
Aye.
Board Member Kissinger.
Recusing.
McGrath.
Aye.
Board Member Singh.
Aye.
Vice Chair.
Aye. So ordered.
And finally, I recommend adoption of item 5D on Montezuma. I understand Board Member McGrath is...
I'll abstain on this one. Please.
Okay.
I move. Good afternoon.
Been moved and second. Any other discussion? Roll call vote, please.
Board Member Bobby Hogan.
Aye.
Board Member Eliasson.
Aye.
Board Member Kissinger.
Aye.
Board Member McGrath.
I'll abstain.
Board Member Singh.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye, thank you. We've got through that stack of papers, let's just say. But a lot of hard work has gone into that, all of that items there. So thank you very much. So we will move on now.
We'll move on to item six, which is consideration of a resolution and prioritized list of basin planning projects that comprises our triennial review. Conclusion of our triennial review process. I'd like Richard Looker to make staff presentation.
Bruce, very through the chair, very quickly before you do, I hate to see really good staff work go unnoticed. And 5F was presented to us, wasn't discussed, but I really appreciate this. I really, in terms of one of the things that I heard from various parties about making sure that we're focusing our enforcement efforts on the right things and we're being transparent, this just seemed perfect to me. This was transparent. I could quickly go through what were minor fines and what weren't, and status. It's there as a public document for all to see. This is the kind of transparency that I think shouldn't be unnoticed. I deeply appreciate this.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Diane smiling, Tom smiling, I think. It doesn't pay a heck of a lot more, but at least we gave you a compliment.
Yeah,
right?
That's right.
Keep up the good work. All right.
Okay, ready to go?
We're good to go. Okay, lights out.
Okay, good morning, Chair Mueller and other members of the Regional Board. My name is Richard Looker, and I'm an engineer in the Planning Division here at the Water Board. And today I'm going to be presenting the results of the triennial review of the Basin Plan. The Basin Plan is our master planning document for water quality for the region, and your agenda package contains a tentative resolution that we're going to be asking you to adopt today on this matter. Okay, so just to give you a little roadmap of the presentation, I'm going to introduce you to what a basin plan is, and so this is kind of timely because we have two new board members, and I think it's always good to review this document. We're going to talk about what a triennial review is and why we do it. We're going to talk about the progress or accomplishments that we've made on the priority projects that we identified in our last triennial review in 2009. We'll tell you about the process that we used during this triennial review to come up with our prioritized list of projects, and then we'll introduce these priority projects to you as well. Okay, so let's start off with what a basin plan is. The basin plan, here I have a copy. In a nice three-ring binder, so it's pretty substantial. And so staff have come to appreciate this for its many uses. For one thing, we can take it to stakeholder meetings and sort of defend ourselves against projectiles if things get out of hand. We have older copies floating around the office that are out of date, and so we can use them to elevate our monitors to get them eye level for us. But in addition to these self-defense and ergonomic applications, it's a very useful document. So as I said earlier, it's the Water Quality Control Plan or Basin Plan. It's the master planning document for a region for water quality, and it lays out a plan for protecting and restoring and protecting the waters of the region, both surface and groundwaters. The plan has like a regulatory dimension to it, and also information or non-regulatory dimension to it. So in terms of the regulatory components, The basin plan establishes the beneficial uses of all of the waters in the region. For example, an example would be a cold freshwater habitat, which is a use that's applied to all the waters that support or could potentially support a cold freshwater fishery, like for steelhead or coho salmon. The basin plan also includes water quality objectives to protect all of these beneficial uses. And there's two sorts of water quality objectives, numeric and narrative objectives. An example of a numeric objective would be we have a specific number for the maximum amount of indicator bacteria that could be contained in a water sample and still protect the water contact beneficial use. Water contact is the use where you actually contact the water, like swimming or surfing or windsurfing. You're going to find out more about how we protect this beneficial use in the presentation following this one. We also have narrative objectives. Narrative objectives don't contain any specific number. Rather, they have a narrative description of the required water quality that's necessary to protect a variety of beneficial uses. And after these components are organized in chapters, so the beneficial uses are in Chapter 2, water quality objectives in Chapter 3. The next chapter is on implementation, and the chapter on implementation essentially lays out the various plans that we have, or implementation plans for how we achieve our water quality objectives. For example, the implementation chapter describes how we regulate sources to surface waters like municipal and industrial wastewater facilities. And this implementation plan would include, among many other things, specific numeric limits for a variety of chemical constituents that are found in the discharges from these facilities. The implementation chapter also describes the Water Board's mini programs for how we protect and manage groundwater. So in addition to the regulatory dimension, there's the basin plan serves an information purpose. It contains maps and tables and a variety of plans and policies from our water board and the state board that might not be regulatory, but it's informational. So now that you know what a basin plan is, what's a triennial review? So a triennial review is a periodic review of our basin plan and water quality standards, and it's required by both federal and state law. So the Federal Clean Water Act requires that a state's water quality standards shall be reviewed every 3 years. Standards is sort of the federal speak that is sort of equivalent to objectives. It's broader. The water quality standard contains the definition of the beneficial use, the objective to protect those uses, and provisions called anti-degradation that are designed to prevent deterioration or degradation of the water bodies as well. The California Water Code requires that such plans, like our basin plan, be periodically reviewed and may be revised. So when we do a triennial review, the review focuses on changes that are needed to the basin plan. So essentially we ask three questions. Is there a need for more environmental protection? So in other words, are additional standards needed, or perhaps new beneficial uses or revised water quality objectives? We also ask whether our basin plan is being consistent with the evolving state board policies or federal regulations. And also, is there a need for site-specific objectives or a review of the attainability of specific beneficial uses for certain water bodies? So the triennial review process itself is not a regulatory action, but the projects that would be suggested and carried out as a result of the review may very well be regulatory actions. Okay, so our last review was in 2009, and so let's take just a moment to review some of the accomplishments that we've made since then. We completed staff work on three major projects that resulted in basin plan amendments that you adopted. One of the priority projects identified during the last review was that our basin plan did not contain many of the region's significant surface water bodies and their beneficial uses. So by completing this update, we designated beneficial uses for nearly 275 water bodies and put those in Table 2-1 of the basin plan. You also adopted a marine water contact recreation water quality objective for Enterococcus, which is a bacterial indicator, and its associated implementation plan that, and this will better protect water contact recreation beneficial use in marine waters. You also adopted an amendment refining the beneficial uses for Hayward Marsh, which was created to reclaim treated wastewater to create brackish marsh habitat. And this refinement of the beneficial uses was necessary, among other things, to provide regulatory certainty for the ongoing discharge needed to maintain the marsh. And we also continue working on projects that were identified during the last review that remain as high priorities during this review, and I'll mention a couple of those later in the presentation. Okay, so here's a quick overview of how we did the triennial review process. In late 2011, we began by reviewing the projects identified during our last review and talking internally with all of our staff and also with state board staff. And from this process, we developed a preliminary set of candidate projects. We then had a workshop in March of this year where we made our stakeholders aware of these candidate projects and invited their participation in the workshop and also to give us input after the workshop on what they thought of these candidate projects and suggest other ones and have a wide-ranging discussion. So as a result of that, we were able to we had about 25 representatives from various organizations who attended the workshop, so it was really well attended and had good discussions. We received comment letters from about 20 of those entities. So as a result of that input, we were able to better define the projects that we had put forward as candidates and also identify some additional projects and refine a little bit the way that we evaluated the projects for ranking purposes. So we then refined our project list, wrote a staff report, and released it on September 7th of this year for a public comment period. And this staff report describes 25 candidate projects, how we did the scoring and ranking of the projects, identifies the top-ranked or priority projects that we'll tell you about. And we received three comment letters during the public comment period for this board meeting, and I'll talk about those comments a little bit later in the presentation. Okay, so the initial stakeholder input that we received at the March workshop was really valuable, and we heard initial comments on our draft list of projects and the proposed scoring approach. And one of the things that we heard from a few of the participants, Baykeeper and also the East Bay East Bay Discharges Authority staff, was that the project ranking really should reflect more of the water board mission. So what's important is really protecting water quality, and so we should rank projects with a little bit more emphasis on that component. And so we agreed, and we did increase the weight given to that dimension of a project. We also heard support for specific projects that we had put forward, shown here on the slide. And so that had the result of adding to a score that sort of characterizes the degree of public interest in the project. So we heard about these specific ones. Okay, so here are the criteria that we use to evaluate the projects. And the maximum possible score associated with them. So you can see at the top giving the maximum of 20 points out of a possible 100 is protecting the water board, protecting beneficial uses or carrying out the water board mission. And you can kind of move down the list. And you know, this US EPA priority, so if we know that the project addresses a known US EPA priority, that could give a project a maximum of 15 points. If we've already invested considerable staff resources in the project, we've been working on it, that could lead to a maximum of 10 points being awarded to that project in terms of the ranking. And then on down the list, if a project is deemed to be relatively uncontroversial or it's not technically complex, we could accomplish it efficiently, that would lead to a maximum of 5 points for the project when we come to rank it for each of those two categories. So the way we do the ranking is that we take a look at every project with these criteria in mind and establish the individual scores for these criteria, and then we add them up. And that's the total score for the project, and we just basically put them in rank order. And as I said, the maximum score is 100 points, and the highest scoring projects will be given priority for us to work on over the next few years. So Based on the ranking criteria and available resources, we've identified 7 high-priority projects, and those all scored at least 60 points out of 100 on with the criteria that we used. And here they are in descending rank order. Accomplishing all of these projects will require at least 9 person years or PYs over the next 3 years. We have, in basin planning, 2 PYs per year, so that's 6 over the 3-year period. So we'll need to make additional staffing resources available either by borrowing from other divisions or perhaps from outside parties to be able to accomplish all these projects. So I'm going to go through them relatively briefly now just to give you a flavor of what these projects are about. So The top priority was completing the stream and wetland system protection policy. In a nutshell, this would update the basin plan to recognize the importance of protecting stream and wetland systems in the region using a watershed approach that recognizes and takes into consideration the physical features of the watershed that are relevant to protecting these systems. The nutrient water quality objectives project is important because the basin plan currently only contains a narrative objective, not a numeric, for protecting against nutrient-related impairments such as excessive algae or low dissolved oxygen or impacts to aquatic biota. So this project would develop a policy for addressing nutrients in San Francisco Bay. We are already in the process of building a San Francisco Bay nutrient strategy to address the potential threat to water quality from discharges of nutrients. And one element of this strategy is an assessment framework that could be used as to translate the narrative objective that we have in the basin plan into numeric objectives for nutrients like phosphorus and nitrogen. And we're also participating in the statewide regulatory work group that is part of the state board's effort to develop a freshwater nutrient policy, and this project has been a high priority project that we've been working on since the 2009 review as well. Biological objectives they measure the condition of aquatic resources in perennial freshwater systems, so the condition rather than just chemical constituents that would impact the condition. So it's like a direct measure of the condition. And this is a statewide project that we are participating in, both technically in that we have collected regional data for the project, and we're participating as part of the regulatory work group. The scope of the actual basin planning project that we would work on will be determined based on the outcome of the statewide project. Dissolved oxygen site-specific objectives. This project will review the adequacy of our current dissolved oxygen objectives, mainly for shallow subtidal habitats, slough channels, and managed wetlands, but it would also include deeper subtidal portions of the bay. So essentially, it would evaluate whether any new scientific evidence is available regarding the dissolved oxygen tolerance of estuarine and marine organisms, and look at new methods for establishing numeric objectives for dissolved oxygen. Toxicity testing is, I think you probably have been hearing a lot about that. The State Water Board is nearing completion on an amendment to the toxicity control provisions of the policy for implementation of toxic standards for inland surface waters and closed bays, estuaries of California. So we never call it that. Like you may have heard this document referred to as the SIP, or State Implementation Plan. It comes up a lot in regulating wastewater. The amendment would update procedures for assessing the potential for chemicals to cause toxicity to aquatic life in surface waters. And the project that we would work on would put forward a basin plan amendment to make our basin plan consistent with the state board's adopted policy and clarify, if necessary, how the region would implement those portions of the policy where the regional boards has some flexibility in implementation. Wet weather overflows implementation. So back in 2007, the State Water Board found that the wet weather permit and time schedule order issued to the East Bay Municipal Utility District to be inconsistent with the Clean Water Act mandate that all municipal wastewater facilities need to provide at least secondary treatment for any water that's discharged into surface water. And they directed the Water Board they remanded the permit back to the Water Board, and they directed the Water Board to amend the basin plan to delete language that conflicts with the Clean Water Act. So we expect this amendment to be a fairly straightforward project. It's fairly clear-cut what we need to do. And we talked about, or you talked about, contaminants of emerging concern earlier in the board meeting. Contaminants of emerging concern pose a significant regulatory challenge because there's many chemicals in use for which there are no water quality objectives and to guide how to regulate. While there is a growing body of information about the likelihood of some of these contaminants contributing to the impacts to beneficial uses, for many there's still a lack of toxicity information, and also just we don't have information about whether they're out there or not because of maybe the scarcity of analytical methods. So the basin planning project would potentially involve adopting a water quality regulatory strategy for managing this class of contaminants. Okay, so we can't emphasize enough how many worthwhile projects we could work on if we had the time and resources. I would say that all of the candidate projects that are in the list, the 25, are all good ideas and you know, should be done, but we do not have the time and resources to work on them. Here are just a few of the projects that came in just below that top tier that we think merit a so-called honorable mention. I'm not going to go through the details of these, but they're described in some detail in the appendix attached to the staff report. So we don't have the staffing resource to address these issues, but we're already working on many of them, either by tracking state board policy development or working with our dischargers or staff in other divisions to scope out these projects. So it is possible that we could work on some of these if additional resources become available from, for example, outside parties. Okay. So I mentioned earlier that we had a lot of public input at the public workshop back in March and through letters received at the workshop, but we only received 3 comment letters for the meeting today. And we also received an email, a very nice email from Baykeeper staff that came in after the comment period that said that they were generally happy with the direction we had taken in terms of our project priorities. So we were gratified to get that feedback even though it came in late. So we had a supportive letter from US EPA. They endorsed our priority project list. We also had a letter from the Westlands Water District and the state water contractors that urged us to take immediate action on nutrient issues for the bay, including the development of nutrient water quality objectives. In our response to the comments document, we explain how we have already been working on a San Francisco Bay specific numeric nutrient assessment framework, and this framework will include indicators of impairment that can be used to assess the beneficial uses of the bay, and also, as I mentioned earlier, provide a pathway to translate our narrative objectives into numeric objectives for nutrients. The North Marin Water District had concerns about the beneficial uses that were stated in the basin plan for Stafford Lake Reservoir, and the response to comments document explains why we have those uses listed and also talks about the rules governing how beneficial uses can be modified and in what circumstances. We did not feel that any changes to the staff report or proposed list of priority projects was necessary based upon the comments that we received. So in closing, as a result of the triennial review process, we developed our list of priority projects that we would work on over the next 3 years. Staff recommends that you adopt the resolution and attach list of priority projects of that you find in your package. And I want to thank you for your attention, and I would be happy to answer any questions you might have. And I also wanted to say I will miss you, Shalom, as well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Richard and staff. Any questions with Richard at this time? Yes.
We
got one down here first.
Go ahead.
Excuse me.
Please.
No, go ahead.
Thank you. Obviously, I'm coming into this at the tail end, so it sounds like there's a great process in place. I just had a question about the projects just below the top tier.
Yeah.
Some of them are very relevant to my part of the region. Will these be brought up in the next review, or what happens to these other than if you have time to work on them?
No, that's a good question. So they don't disappear. In fact, the beginning of our next triennial review process, we review what was on the list from this review to see if it's still relevant. We kind of talk to staff. We talk to state board. Maybe there's been some action that the State Board has taken to help with some of these things that would change how we would view them, but they don't disappear. Many of the ones that are on the list now are veterans of several triennial reviews, unfortunately, and we take a fresh look at them each time we do a review and do the ranking.
Great. Thank you.
Board Member Singh?
Well, and I'd expand on that just a bit to note that these issues, some of them are very broad, some of them are more narrow, but we are looking for opportunities where we may not necessarily need to make policy changes to the basin plan, that we can still do work that furthers that issue, such as on climate change. We are recognizing sea level rise concerns. We've been for the last few years including provisions in our land disposal permits requiring sites to evaluate their containment system, their levees, in response to sea level rise. So we're looking at ways we can move forward even if we're not able to do a full policy document.
Thank you.
Board Member Singh?
I just wanted to make a comment. First of all, I always appreciate the staff for the kind of effort goes into developing these plans, a very comprehensive plan, and all the input, receiving, organizing, working, and I have appreciated the quality and dedication of the staff. But one more comment, like I am an engineer. I mean, I was a professor, engineer, and my training was usually I like to see in future, that's my suggestion, if it is appropriate, that currently existing basin plan and what you are proposing right now in the river regulation, what are the changes, or at least obvious changes? How different, at what place they are different? Just to give you a glance, quick glance, I know that you are trying to improve the water quality in the region and your plan is working on every step of the way to enhance the quality of monitoring, quality of testing, quality, improving the water quality, all the means you are taking, regulating. But just if there was a way, it may not be convenient in every situation, just to put, well, this is existing and after modification or adopting the new plan, these are the major changes which will occur or they are different.
Actually, in this case, what we're doing is looking at potential projects that would develop that type of language. In other words, in a couple instances where we've described the projects, we say this is where the changes would be made, but at this point, we haven't done the work that would come up with that wording. Now, that's different. The next item you have, which establishes the TMDL, or would establish the TMDL in the Pacifica water bodies, there we have included the specific wording changes that would go into the basin plan. But this is more the planning to do the work that would generate what you
I'm not really saying the work over here. I'm just complimenting. I'm just making a suggestion. Some kind of table or form on the left side, on the right side, if it is feasible and possible, so I can at a glance I can see. And but I know that you guys are working on that. This itself is a good document, and I showed me the volume over there. I can go to your probably to your office, and I'll see the stacks of papers and maps and tables and charts, which I don't want to go through all that. Thank you.
I thought that was a professor's dream. Oh, no, you put that on the students. Okay. Board Member McGrath.
Chairman Mueller, are there any requests to speak on this one?
No.
Okay. Then I do have a comment. I support this, and I support the set of priorities. I have a couple suggestions for integrative work. I think projects 1, 2, and some aspects of consideration of sea level rise kind of need to be integrated together. I mean, there are some policy drivers. The revisions to the water laws in this state, which were adopted several years ago, allow the water boards to adopt in stream standards, and they perhaps, in some interpretation, maybe even require some consideration of that. And the State Board has let us know repeatedly that we can address that anytime we want. That obviously ties into protection of existing resources in streams and the biological objectives What I'm interested in particular here as you go forward is making a differentiation between streams with a potential with which have a habitat and those streams which have potential for restoration of some of our endangered salmonid populations. So though, I don't want to see those things go up in stovepipes in policy analysis in the basin plan. And then sea level rise, while I agree that there are other higher priorities, and while I'm enough of a detail person, I'd love to see this get down to stream level. I understand this is a basin plan level, but I think we need to keep in mind that the lower portions of streams, the channel morphology is, and by the way, sediment delivery to the bay is driven by the amount of tidal prism that you have. And we have a whole series of flood control systems that not only won't work as sea level begins to rise, but rely on artificial maintenance of a channel prism which is not really viable. And in that sense, enhancement of tidal prism begins to pay off in flood control and in habitat and in lower maintenance costs. So with your people out in the field looking at streams, you know, it's a chance to kind of get, we got to organize projects into stovepipes, I understand that, but cross-integrative thinking. So I support it all. And there's some things that if you tie together in the field, your staff will talk to each other and we'll get better results. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, any other further comments? Vice Chair.
Yeah, I just had a question. The priority ranking for TMDL development was also included in this package. And it may be in here, but I can't bring it up right now. Can you tell us what the staff resources are for this list of TMDLs? An hour later.
We have about 9 PYs to work on TMDLs.
Okay, and is that a sufficient number, or is the workload actually greater than 9 PYs?
As depends on how here. Fast you want to complete them.
Yeah. Depends on how many comments we have. Huh? And I know which one you're talking about.
We're making progress.
Oh, sorry.
Thank you.
I just wanted to add, though, the growing challenge is not only the list of impaired waters for which we have to still develop TMDLs, but as we develop them, we have implementation challenges. And so that's
it continue.
The dilemma that we mm-hmm. deal with now, that we don't have sufficient resources to develop all our TMDLs and implement them simultaneously. So there's a continuous strategy effort on our part to look for a balance between where we make sure we adequately implement what we've already brought forward to you as TMDLs versus work on new ones. So it's we could easily use twice as many resources and still mm-hmm. be in the hole.
Right. All right. Thank you.
I just want to take back my comment. I only read the green sheets before I came to the meeting. When I look in the body of the item number 7, I do see that changes are shown or underlined or have been deleted. So you have made that effort. So I thank you. I take back my comment.
Thank you, Dr. Singh. Any other further comments on this item? Good job, staff, Richard. Good job. A little humor in there, too. That's nice. We're rubbing off on you up here.
There you go.
Executive
Officer. So with that, I'd recommend adoption of the resolution that's in your package. And as part of that resolution, there is the list of prioritized projects that we'll be pursuing. Also recognizing that since we don't want to be putting ourselves into having to enforce against ourselves, this is a recommended list, as we say. We'll be moving forward using this as our guidance document, but there may be opportunities to work on some of the lower tier projects depending on resources, depending on opportunities to work with stakeholders. And so when we come back in 3 years, we hope to have made significant progress on all of these, but it may not look exactly like the 1 through 7 we have here. But with that, I'd recommend adoption of the resolution.
Move approval.
Move to adopt it.
Moved and second. Vice Chair?
Just one second. Let's put it in any order you like. We're two of us.
Very good. So at this time, any further discussion on the motion? If not, roll call vote, please, Mary.
Aye.
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 Aye. So ordered. This next item, I don't know the length of it, but we have some speaker cards also.
Is that a separate item here, Chairman, or is it part of it?
No.
Item seven is a separate item where we have a separate action.
So I'd like to be able to just kind of grind through this. I don't know if everyone needs a break, but maybe we can just grind through it if everyone's comfortable, board members. Okay, we're gonna grind here. So, all right.
Okay, item seven is consideration of a proposed basin plan amendment that would establish a total maximum daily load for bacteria in San Pedro Creek and at Pacifica State Beach. So I'd like Farhad Gadrati to make the staff presentation.
Thank you. Welcome, Farhad.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Farhad Gadrati. I'm an environmental scientist in the planning division. Today, you are considering adopting a resolution amending the basin plan that would do two things. First, it would establish a bacteria TMDL for San Pedro Creek and Pacifica State Beach. Second, the resolution would incorporate new implementation provisions for bacteria water quality objectives. As you heard during Richard's presentation, our basin plan includes the water quality objectives that we must attain to demonstrate that uses of water bodies are being protected. These new provisions apply to establishing bacteria TMDLs. In today's presentation, I will explain what the TMDL is and describe the problem. That is the reason we need a TMDL. I will also discuss the numeric targets, that is the desired future water quality conditions. I will describe the implementation plan, that is the proposed corrective actions to fix the problem. I will then discuss the monitoring and adaptive implementation plans, which help us determine whether water quality is improving, and if we should in the future reconsider the TMDL. Lastly, I will summarize key comments and from stakeholders and a response. So what is a TMDL? Under Section 303D of the Federal Clean Water Act, the water boards are required to identify and list impaired or not meeting water quality standards water bodies within the regions. Once a water body has been placed on the 303D list, the Clean Water Act requires us to develop a TMDL to restore water quality. A TMDL is a water quality improvement plan to attain water quality standards for a given water body. The impaired waters addressed by this TMDL are San Pedro Creek and Pacifica State Beach. And to orient you geographically, here's a map of San Pedro Creek and Pacifica State Beach, which are located in the city of Pacifica in western San Mateo County. As you can see, San Pedro Creek drains into Pacifica State Beach. So it made sense to us to develop TMDLs for these water bodies, for these waters as a single project. The creek and beach are used for recreational activities such as swimming, surfing, and picnicking, and provide important habitat for aquatic species and wildlife. The problem is that the beneficial uses of these water bodies are not fully protected. They are being impacted by bacterial levels above the objectives in our basin plan. So what are the sources of bacterial pollution in the watershed? We have identified four potential sources. Sanitary sewer systems, which can pollute the water through overflows, leaks, and line breaks. Horse facilities, which can pollute the water through improper management of horse waste. Municipal storm drains, which can contain and transport bacteria from a variety of sources, such as pet waste and poorly managed trash. And lastly, there are also background or natural sources of bacteria, such as wildlife. We view the first three sources as controllable sources, meaning that we can do something to curb their contribution to the impairment. background source category, however, is not a readily controllable source. A TMDL looks to control these sources in order to clean up the impaired water body. However, the presence of uncontrollable background sources suggests that we may not be able to clean up these waters beyond a certain point. To account for these background sources, we are proposing to use a reference system and anti-degradation approach, which from here on I'll refer to as the reference system approach. The reference system approach accounts for uncontrollable background sources of bacteria, essentially subtracting them out so that the regulatory actions focus on cleaning up controllable sources. This approach determines the percentage of time an objective is exceeded in a similar but undeveloped reference watershed. These exceedances are attributed to uncontrollable background sources. It then uses that percentage to allow a certain number of exceedances of the objectives at the impaired water body so that we can focus on controllable sources. This approach has been used in Southern California for more than a decade. In order to use this approach in our region, as part of this project, we also need to amend the basin plan to allow its use. The new implementation provisions would only make this approach an option for future TMDLs. You would have to approve a use when you consider a TMDL in the future. So getting back to the San Pedro Creek and Pacifica State Beach TMDL, here are the TMDL targets for both the creek and beach expressed in terms of weekly exceedances of bacteria objectives. These targets are the level of water quality the TMDL aims to achieve. As you notice, the targets are divided into different weather periods. This is intended to focus the proposed corrective actions appropriately. Each exceedance represents one weekly sampling event where the number of bacteria exceeds the objectives of water contact recreational use. Another way of thinking about it is that each exceedance represents a week when the creek or beach does not meet the objectives. As you can see, the current exceedances are shown in the top row. For example, based on a five-year average, San Pedro Creek exceeds bacteria objectives for a total of 14 events in dry weather and 14 events in wet weather, or about half a year. The allowable exceedances are listed in the bottom row, and the reductions in the number of exceedances needed to achieve the targets are shown in the middle row. You can see that the TMDL will require significant improvement in the creek. On the other hand, the beach exceedances must only decrease by one during summer dry weather. So how are we going to meet numeric targets? In other words, how are we going to solve the problem? To meet the targets, the TMDL implementation plan requires the sanitary sewer system, horse facility, and municipal storm drain source categories to undertake measures to control discharges of waste in the watershed. The plan capitalizes on existing efforts and relies on regulatory programs that are already in place. The plan also includes a monitoring program whose results would be used to adaptively manage the TMDL implementation and reconsider targets if necessary. And here are some of the specific actions proposed in the implementation plan. For example, the responsible parties for the municipal storm drains, the city and county, are required to comply with the existing municipal regional stormwater permit requirements. They are also required to identify and implement additional measures as necessary to sufficiently control bacteria discharges. Such measures may include public education campaigns, additional storm drain cleaning, or construction of facilities to detain, divert, infiltrate, or treat runoff. These control measures would then be incorporated in the municipal regional stormwater permit when next reissued. Another controllable source of bacteria in the watershed is the sanitary sewer system, and these are the proposed actions for controlling discharges from this source category. There are two parts to a sanitary sewer system, a public or city-owned part and a private part, which is owned by private home and business owners. The city is responsible for identifying and repairing problem areas in the public portion. Under Pacifica's sewer lateral ordinance, the home and business owners are responsible to maintain and repair the private sewer laterals. These actions are already required by existing permits or enforcement actions. For example, as part of an enforcement action settlement agreement, Pacifica has agreed to complete an $820,000 grant program. This program would repair or replace up to 480 defective private laterals. So the TMDL does not propose any new actions or requirements for this source category. Horse facilities are final source category address in this TMDL. At this time, there are three horse facilities in the watershed, and these are the proposed implementation actions for them. These actions are based on existing local and state regulations, which basically ask for restricting animal access to creeks, managing animal waste, separating clean from polluted runoff, and managing polluted runoff. Another element of the TMDL is monitoring and adaptive implementation, which is needed to measure progress and make necessary adjustments as the project goes forward. Currently, some water quality monitoring is being conducted at the beach and at the creek mouth. The TMDL asks for additional monitoring to be conducted in the watershed to refine source assessment and evaluate control measure effectiveness. We look to the city and county to propose a plan for the additional monitoring, which will be incorporated into the municipal regional stormwater permit when next reissued. The adaptive implementation component of the TMDL allows us to periodically review and evaluate new information, such as water quality monitoring data, or information on control measure effectiveness, and consider any necessary adjustment to the TMDL targets or the implementation plan. This is consistent with other TMDLs we have adopted, which allow no regrets action to take place now while we continue to gather information. During the public review period, we received four comment letters. Since then, we have met and discussed the comments with the stakeholders and have considered and responded to all the comments. US EPA fully supports the TMDL and our use of the reference system approach, but they also had asked for several clarifying changes to our documents, which we have made. The other comment letters generally support the water quality improvement goal of the TMDL, but we realize that the city has some concerns. We responded to some of these concerns by modifying the basin plan amendment and a staff report. For example, we extended the date to meet the bacteria TMDL in San Pedro Creek and the date for submittal of the required monitoring plan. We also addressed concerns about the water quality monitoring requirements and clarified our cost estimates for certain potential control measures and monitoring. I'm going to list some of the key concerns raised. Both the city and county raise a concern that the numeric targets may not be achievable. The city raises some additional concerns. They do not think they should be required to implement any additional corrective actions beyond the baseline actions currently required by the municipal regional stormwater permit. The city also questions the appropriateness of applying Southern California reference systems to develop numeric targets for the creek and beach, and is concerned that they are being required to control natural sources of bacteria. Lastly, the city raises concern that it lacks funding to support implementation of additional corrective measures. Our response to these concerns is that the majority of the actions required by the TMDL are existing control actions that have yet to be completed. Monitoring is necessary to determine the effectiveness of these efforts at achieving the numeric targets. The TMDL also relies on existing permit requirements and iterative improvements beyond current actions to attain targets. The TMDL will focus the future actions required under a reissued municipal regional stormwater permit, avoiding unnecessary significant new actions. Further, an important element of the TMDL is inclusion of an adaptive implementation approach. So we evaluate into the future whether the TMDL and numeric targets need to be revised. On the issue of the reference system, we maintain that the selected systems are appropriate. They represent similarly sized undeveloped watershed to which we have applied local rainfall information. Identification of a Northern California reference system requires an investment of resources. We are currently working on the earlier stages of a project to identify such systems. We will review and propose revisions to the TMDL as new information becomes available. Lastly, we recognize the current challenging fiscal situation. However, as we explained at the beginning of the presentation, the Federal Clean Water Act requires the Water Board to develop and implement the TMDL to address the existing water quality impairment. The TMDL seeks to resolve the impairment as efficiently and cost-effectively as possible. In summary, today we are asking you to consider a basin plan amendment that will adopt the TMDL to address bacteria impairment in San Pedro Creek and Pacifica State Beach. The TMDL would require corrective actions such that water quality targets will be achieved in 8 to 15 years. The TMDL also includes monitoring and adaptive implementation components, which help us assess progress and consider any necessary adjustments as we go forward. And lastly, the resolution would also add new implementation provisions to the basin plan, which would account for uncontrollable natural sources of bacteria for these and future bacteria TMDLs. We believe that the proposed amendment represents our best effort to address the stakeholder concerns, protect water quality, and meet all federal and state requirements. By adopting this resolution, you will be taking a key step in assuring that San Pedro Creek and Pacifica State Beach are safe for people to recreate in and enjoy. That's the end of my presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions we have.
Thank you. We do have a couple of cards to board members. Would you like to hear the comments and then the questions? Okay. Very good. So, Pacifica, Mr. White, Planning Director, City of Pacifica first, and then Managing Engineer for San Mateo John.
Yes.
Lights.
All the lights.
Good morning, Chairman Mueller and members of the board. My name is George White. I'm the planning director for the City of Pacifica. I would like to acknowledge the work of your staff, especially Farhad Gardradi, Keith Lichten, and Naomi Fager for their hard work on the proposed basin amendment. The City of Pacifica currently has an active stormwater program. We are, on a regular basis, conducting street sweeping on all commercial and residential roadways, inspecting stormwater pump station to ensure dissolved oxygen levels meet required thresholds, and checking for trash, odor, color, turbidity, and hydrocarbons, controlling runoff from our corporation yards using special BMPs, inspecting 170 industrial and commercial facilities that could contribute to pollution to stormwater runoff, training stormwater inspectors, inspecting construction sites to ensure stormwater controls are in place, diverting a lot of the dry weather stormwater from the ANSA stormwater pump station to the wastewater treatment plant, educating the public about stormwater protection through the local newspaper and our website, promoting creek and beach cleanups, promoting and participating in Earth Day events, the San Mateo County Fair and Fog Fest, working collaboratively and actively with the Pacifica Beach Coalition on stormwater protection events, organizing events for school-aged children, such as the environmental education field trip to Maury Point and the community action grant to Ocean Source School, and the training of staff on the use of integrated pest management programs. And that's just a sample of our regular activities. In addition, we have recently modified our local ordinance to require low-impact development features, or LID, such as rain barrels, green roofs, or permeable pavement for projects with a 10,000 square feet or more of impervious surface. Recently developed a web-based complaint system to help residents report illicit storm drain activity. It's now being used to quickly investigate potential stormwater-related pollution issues reported to the public, reported by the public. Installed a tree filter box and a vegetated bioswale to filter stormwater runoff from the dog park, installed 31 trash full capture devices, and will shortly install a large transfer pump at one of our stormwater pump stations to be able to divert 100% of dry weather stormwater runoff from this location. As you can see, the city is already doing a lot to control stormwater, and as I mentioned, we recently started implementing new activities as required by the stormwater MRP. But we are also starting to implement a private sewer lateral program, and we're also starting to conduct many activities to control sanitary sewers under the 2011 cease and desist order that was adopted by the board. As a result, we strongly request that there be no new requirements for stormwater BMPs at this time. Please let us get these existing activities going and don't pile on more. Let's see what effect these improvements are having on the creek and the beach through the monitoring program. In addition, the city believes that there is no guarantee that additional stormwater BMPs will achieve the proposed allocations any more quickly than with current activities, which are already very strong. The city is stretched financially. We simply can't add other activities at this time. As an example, due to the city's very limited budget for current fiscal year, the city has cut previous funding levels for the Pacifica Chamber of Commerce's Visitor Center, cut funding levels to the Pacifica Resource Center, which helps low and no income families, and cut the number of hours that the Pacifica Sanchez Library, our public library, is open. Although we discussed the issue of no new activities with your staff on multiple occasions, we received mixed messages. We are very concerned that the Table 7-4-1-4 in the proposed Bation Amendment specifies that the city must submit a plan describing additional BMPs that will be implemented to prevent or reduce discharges of bacteria to storm drain systems to attain waste load allocations. Specifically, we request that it be made clear by the board that the activities that the city is currently conducting under the existing stormwater MRP are sufficient for the city's actions in the implementation of this TMDL. If necessary, we request that this item be delayed if specific language for the Basin Plan Amendment is needed to reflect this approach. Although we would welcome your verbal support at a minimum at this board hearing. The City of Pacifica is very committed to protecting our environment, and we appreciate your consideration of this request. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next speaker. Is he here? There he is.
Good morning. I'm John Conan. I work for EOA, and I'm here on behalf of the San Mateo Countywide Stormwater Pollution Prevention Program today. So first off, kudos to staff. I thought that the staff report and the proposed basin plan amendment were very well written, very well organized. Good job on that. We're not asking for any substantive changes to the TMDL at this point in time, but we are asking for a little more transparency in one area. And we'd also like to set the stage for considering doing things a little bit differently in the future. I'll explain what I mean. So the issue that we're particularly concerned about is the derivation of the allocations. The allocations are based on recreational water quality objectives, and the way that those objectives are derived results in them not necessarily being the best fit for this watershed. Two reasons for that. One is the objectives are based on a level of exposure that occurs at a bathing beach, which is a much higher level of use than you would expect in San Pedro Creek, for example. Number two is that the objectives are derived based on exposure to treated human wastewater. But what we know in this watershed is that there is likely a substantial contribution of fecal contamination from non-wildlife but domestic animal sources, you know, cats, dogs, horses. Exposure to fecal contamination from those sources is almost certainly less risky than exposure to human wastewater. So the upshot of all of this is that the allocations, which are based on these objectives, are very conservative. And of course, we want to err on the side of being conservative when it comes to protecting beneficial uses. And the water quality objectives are definitely the appropriate regulatory tool to be used. But the catch is that public resources are limited, and we can't necessarily afford to be very conservative with every problem, because that may take away resources from some other problem, you know, if we're too conservative in the way we address one particular problem. So why am I saying all of this at this time? One thing is it's a call for more transparency. You know, we would like to see more discussion about the way that the water quality objectives are derived and how that is not necessarily a perfect fit for this watershed. I mean, no question it's the appropriate regulatory tool, and you know, the allocations and objectives are based on the best information that is available at this time, but they are more regulatory-based than science-based at this point in time. And what we'd like to do is set the stage for considering doing things differently in the future, in that EPA allows for development, or the proposing in the new draft water quality criteria, to allow for development of site-specific objectives. And they name tools that can be used for doing this, things like quantitative microbial risk assessment, epidemiological studies, sanitary surveys, etc. And we would like to recognize that we want to consider whether it would make sense to consider using those tools in the future, you know, both in this watershed through the adaptive implementation process of this TMDL, and then potentially as other TMDLs are developed in San Mateo County and elsewhere in the Bay Area. So I probably used a lot of my time. Do I have time to make one more point here? Yeah. Okay. This TMDL, like all new TMDLs, has monitoring requirements associated with it. And the question is, how are we going to pay for this additional monitoring? When the MRP stormwater permit was developed, staff did a great job of working with us to say, you know, what are the questions that we want to answer, and how can we put together a program of monitoring that will help us answer those questions within reasonable use of limited public resources. And we came up with a plan that all of us could live with. But now what's happening as more TMDLs are developed, more monitoring requirements are being layered on top of those. So we're trying to think about how those things can be funded. One thing that we'd like to consider is that there is a, as you know, I think, a stormwater permit monitoring surcharge primarily used to fund the swamp program now. And we would like some consideration of integrating programs funded through that surcharge with new monitoring requirements that are being layered on top of existing permit requirements as new TMDLs are developed. So, thank you.
Thank you. Questions on the comments here? Vice Chair?
Mr. Chairman, I am going to have some comments, but I would actually like to do them after I hear the staff responses.
Response, okay,
yeah.
Fine.
Thank you.
Board McGrath?
I do have a question or two for the staff, so we do need a response for them, but the public testimony is over.
Correct.
I appreciate that. I appreciate John's comment in particular. This is a difficult TMDL for a couple of different reasons. There's the peer review comments about reference sites, which I give a substantial amount of weight to. It's not necessarily that they're inaccurate, but there is a certain level of uncertainty about a reference site. And I realize the staff has done a good job, but reference sites, in order to be comparable, need to have roughly the same size, the same slope, the same rainfall regime, and in some cases similar enough geology so that you know the assemblages are going to be accurate. And that goes to the heart of this, because what's difficult here is teasing apart human fecal coliform, non-human fecal coliform, and then in the non-human fecal coliform, domestic and wild sources, and that's not easy. And I hope that we end up that what we're pursuing is a no regrets menu that focuses us on the human sources of coliform. and enough data on the non-human sources so we can begin to cycle into any other control facilities in a cost-effective manner. So there's one other thing that troubles me in looking at this that I picked up, there's the same number of wet and dry exceedances in San Pedro Creek, and there's some level of diversion of dry weather flows. And so my question to the staff, which I would like to hear a little bit, is I don't know where those diversions are in terms of the total size and the sampling locations for the violations, and it says simply that they exceed the standards, but I don't know if there's texture within that signal that indicates the wet weather exceedances are much worse than the dry weathers, and what the relative effectiveness. I have kind of an instinct that we need to work in this area on lateral connections, and perhaps we need to accelerate the pace of that. That seems to me to be the priority. So I would like hopefully the staff's response to focus us a little more down in terms of the relative priority and effectiveness that we know of our control actions and what levels of uncertainty. It's always difficult when you're dealing with uncertainty to not spend a bunch of money chasing uncertainty and not budge the problem at all. So I don't want to do that. I want to be strategic in whatever additional research we're doing. But certainly, given our experience throughout the Bay Area, laterals are a problem. I want to make sure that we're not overspending in other arenas unless we have evidence to that effect. So I'd like the staff's response to kind of try to cover those issues.
So Naomi Fager, the Planning Division Chief. I'll take an initial... I'll initially respond, and then I'll allow others to add to that response. I would say that we haven't been monitoring in the San Pedro Creek itself to sort of determine what's been happening over time in the watershed, and that's sort of one of the things that we would like to get some information on that would help us to sort of focus and answer the question you're talking about, whether or not, as these actions are being taken, do they result in reductions in discharge of bacteria through the storm drain system. We are going to rely on, for the most part, the actions that, as you heard from Mr. White, that the city is taking, and there'll be a time lapse in terms of evaluating as those actions are taken, how the watershed responds. The additional actions we're requiring are, we're hoping that the sampling, the monitoring, will inform some of those, and looking to the city to sort of make some recommendations for least cost, best practicable additional actions that could be taken. And it could be, for example, those initial actions could be very simple in terms of just requiring outreach to the folks in the watershed to reduce discharges even from pet waste, for example. In terms of the comment you made about dry weather versus wet weather, I can probably let Farhad speak a little bit, Godradi speak a little bit to the level of diversion that's currently going on. The city, as they talked about, have plans to increase the level of diversion, but it's small to date. And if you can go back to the slide that Farhad showed in the dry weather and the wet weather in San Pedro Creek in particular, there's certainly a similar level of exceedance of the water quality objectives in both seasons. So we do expect that there is a contribution during the dry weather flows to the creek. So in terms of, I was going to mention something else.
I did note that, and that would kind of as a rebuttable hypothesis suggest that there are close enough sources and they're urban in nature so that they're washed into the system with urban runoff. Now that's rebuttable, but if there's not a significant difference between winter and summer violations, I mean, that's kind of where I would start.
Farhad Godrati, Waterboard. One thing to point out, as far as those numbers that I showed earlier on level of exceedances between dry and wet weather, there are fewer number of wet days in a year than dry days. So even though the numbers are the same, you can see that the exceedances would be more severe and more numerous during wet weather. As far as dry weather diversions, the city is doing a good job of diverting some of the dry weather flows, but not all of them. There are storm drains that discharge directly into the creek. Those discharges are not diverted. Only a portion of the dry weather flows that are captured are actually being sent to the pump station, which is at the very bottom of the watershed near the ocean, and then they're being diverted in summertime. The other portion that discharges into the creek obviously is not being diverted.
Board, ready to go, Vice Chair?
I'm ready to go.
Ready to go.
Okay. First of all, I wanted to note that the September 10th, 2011 Science News had an article about cracked sewers leaking fecal germs, and it featured the study that was done by the woman, Patricia Ann Holden, who was our peer reviewer on this document. The news from Science News was, aha, we finally have some really good evidence from studies across the United States that where we can really trace the cracked sewers, this would be laterals or mains, to fecal germs in streams and sometimes in drinking water. So I wanted to, first of all, sort of give my kudos to the staff for having just about a one-year turnaround between the time that the scientific community really accepted something and and you guys put it into play. So just wanted to point that one out. I also really appreciate the fact that the staff and the State Board and EPA have worked together to creatively address a problem that we've heard before at this board, which is, gee, we're exceeding the limits that are on the books, but it's actually partly due to wildlife, and so we shouldn't have to, ramp down if there's something that's actually a natural source. And so I appreciate that this was a pretty important issue to solve, and really like the work that you did to come up with a way to actually try to account for the wildlife portion, and so that we don't make the people with the controllable sources responsible for more than they can possibly control. In the abstract, I support the reference system methodology. You all know it's a pretty accepted scientific method for being able to determine what conditions would be in a watershed in the absence of anthropogenic activity. So in the abstract, it's a really well-tested way to go. The fact that we don't have a local set of reference systems and one that is exactly the same in slope and aspect and perhaps populations of wildlife is not a perfect situation. But my feeling after reading the staff report is that it's using the Southern California set of systems as a pragmatic approach for now until we have better data. It's certainly better than holding people responsible for even more stringent, cutbacks because we would be trying to, because we wouldn't have any reference systems at all. So I think as a first step, it's reasonable. What the staff has proposed is very reasonable. A second part of the implementation of this is making all of the dischargers collectively responsible for meeting the objectives at the points of compliance. And that, I think, again, is a pragmatic approach at this point in time because we don't have the monitoring data to show exactly where the fecal coliform is entering the system and exactly what the sources are and exactly how much is human and exactly how much is not human. If we had that data, we wouldn't have to do this, go forward with this plan of having, you know, collective responsibility for compliance. So again, I think that's kind of what we have to do right now, practically speaking. But I would really like for the staff and the dischargers to think about ways in the future, in the next iteration, that we could build in off-ramps for particular dischargers so that if a particular discharger does come up with a monitoring data that says, let me really simplify this, you know, upstream we have X numbers of violations and downstream we have X numbers of violations, so we are clearly not adding to the problem. If there's a situation like that in which a discharger can say, I've done everything that I'm supposed to do and I'm really not adding to the problem anymore, we need to create off-ramps so that they can kind of get out of the regulatory umbrella or somehow create an incentive for them to be able to say, okay, we're not the problem anymore. You know, let us go. Keep going after those other guys. And I know we try to do that in terms of our implementation and in terms of the focus of our staff activities. But having something a little more formal, I think, would be good for dischargers because they would then have a lot more confidence that they were going to have the incentive to do whatever cleanup they had to do really quickly. Backing up, I understand right now that what we're asking for in compliance is just implementation of BMPs as a first step. And again, I think that's the way we have to go in order to implement this collective responsibility. Okay, enough on that. In response to the comments from the city of Pacifica, I understand the concern that they want to be able to show or have the opportunity to show that the activities that they recently ramped up are going to have, you know, whatever effect they're going to have before they then have to go and take next steps. And in that context, I am noting on table 7.4.1-4, which is the implementation plan requirement schedule on page 9 of the proposed basin plan amendment, the schedule that we have asked the municipal stormwater runoff element to comply with for monitoring, for coming up with a monitoring plan, is as soon as possible and no later than June 2014. That's the same timeline that we have them on to submit their implementation plans, which would summarize what they're doing now and any additional steps that they think they need to take. So recognizing that, I am maybe just suggesting that to the extent that the permittees can get the monitoring system in place as soon as possible, because that's your way out of putting on additional, you know, planning additional BMPs for yourselves. I mean, we're dealing right now with a lack of information, so we're going to make a decision in the face of uncertainty. I'm comfortable with what the staff proposal is in that regard, but I understand that it's a difficult situation. Thank you.
Board member Singh.
You know, this looks like a very complex problem in my mind.
Speak into the mic a little louder, please, Mr.
Yeah.
Singh.
So some of the numbers have been reduced drastically. We in the past have slowly made improvement in water quality by adopting a gradual improvement so that city and county can bear the cost. Something like in this table, the weeks reduction is rather, sometimes you have gone down 13, 10, and it gone down to zero also, the zero tolerance, I will say. I was questioning that, is this attainable? And second question is, you have a table over here that you show that who is responsible for what pollution. Question was, what is the background pollution during the dry weather? The zero week tolerance of exceedance of the bacteria. Do we have a data then dry weather? There is no contribution of bacteria at any time. When a dry weather, I will say that mostly it will accumulate any kind of let wild animals or any activities in the forest. And what suggestion you have for the city, for example, they enumerated a series of steps, best practices they are following. Now it comes to that some of the sewer line are broken and that can be fixed when discovered, you know, and that can be one item. I was also wondering that, was city involved during the development of these policies over here, during the city and county, while you were developing and telling what we're doing, you giving input, or you only get them this document at the end of your deliberation or on preparation, ask for their comments? I'm just kind of concerned a little bit here that the rigor of the plan, if it is attainable and practical, I'm not sure that I know the answer. And one of the word I was reading through the document, I found bacterial elimination system. I didn't understand what is that kind of animal. Somebody or something like that language, do you know what is that? You don't recall anything like that?
This is Farhad Godrati with the Water Board. About your last question, I don't recall seeing a phrase like that in the report.
I can't find it. Sometimes I was looking over the document, I found something and it sat in my mind, but I can't remember the exact language. What I was asking the staff, is it possible to look at the document, look at the concerns, because you also have allocated that these people are responsible for these activities, how accurate those allocations are, and that includes everybody or not, or should be individually people should be held responsible, or city or entity should be held responsible, or collectively done. I'm not going to make a judgment on that, what is right, what is wrong, what is legal, what is illegal. But the question is that the time frame of implementation or rigor of implementation, I want to be attainable, and I want to be not excessively costly to the city. The city go broke, or the county go broke. I don't know the magnitude of the problem, but I do find myself, this is, we want to improve the water quality in the beaches. We don't want to have bacteria there. But is it possible to have zero all the time, year-round, zero bacteria? Because even human activity in the beaches, and when you are swimming or the kids are swimming, they urinate in the water. So even while the activities are going on the beaches, they themselves create bacteria. You know, it is not only it's coming from upland, you know. So I was just looking at the practical aspect of the approach over here, or maybe if there is a room to relook at the whole system. Well, I don't know what else I can say. I can keep on saying all these things, but...
Let me see if I can respond to you. Naomi Fager again, Planning Division Chief. I would say that the beach is actually in pretty good shape, and we're only requiring in the dry weather a reduction of one exceedance day. So they're in in pretty good during, that was summer dry weather specifically. The city, as you said, the best practices, I mean, they are taking a lot of measures and implementing BMPs, and we'll work with them collaboratively to sort of make sure that those BMPs that they put forward into the future over the next 15 years for the creek, which has a longer compliance sort of time frame, are cost-effective and efficient. We did meet with the city through the, you know, we have met with them sooner than at the end of this project, just to answer your question. And in terms of attainability of the exceedance days that we've put forward here, I mean, we are meeting water quality objectives. It's not about a zero, meeting zero. We're meeting the water quality objectives that are in our basin plan. We're just allowing a different frequency of exceedance rather than, you know, having to meet them 100% of the time, which is what we've done in our other TMDLs. You know, if we didn't use this approach, we would basically be saying you have to be meeting these objectives 100% of the time. It's a reflection on what Vice Chair Young mentioned. We are doing an adaptive implementation, so we'll be looking over time to see how attainable the numeric targets are.
Thank you.
I'll make one add to that, is that Dr. Singh, you say that how can we get to zero bacteria? We're not saying zero bacteria in table 741-1. We have the water quality objectives, and we recognize there will be bacteria, but there's various levels of bacteria that are protective of the beneficial use, either the marine use or the fresh water use, and that's what we've spelled out there, but also using the reference system to try to make sure that we're not trying to get something more stringent that might be coming from wildlife. So really, we're looking at exceedances of these objectives, not exceedance of zero, necessarily.
Thank you. Board Member Kissinger.
Thank you very much. It would help me to understand, if this TMDL amendment is adopted, well, could you put in some concrete terms what specifically, in terms of cost or magnitude of impacts on the city, would actually come out of this? I didn't hear that in the comments from the representative from Pacifica, but perhaps in the conversations that you've had, you have some feel for that.
This is Farhad Kodrat again with the Water Board. Just in general terms, there are three source categories again that need to be addressed. One is three horse facilities. Those are not the responsibility of the cities as far as, you know, actually doing underground actions, that they just, you know, need to make sure that those facility owners and operators are complying with the city and county ordinances, so that wouldn't add any cost to city. The sanitary sewer system, as I mentioned during my presentation again, which we hope would address a lot of the problem because of all those old leaky laterals, those are already required under existing permits or enforcement action, so there wouldn't be any additional cost or new cost to the city. We are asking for water quality monitoring, and we have estimated it to be between maybe $3,000 to $8,000 a year, and that would be shared by county and the city. I don't think that's, you know, unreasonable. So then the next question is, how much would it cost to implement corrective measures to address stormwater runoff and dry weather flow discharges, and that's yet to be determined. We provided some cost estimates in the staff report, unit cost and, you know, the cost of typical BMP implementations, but we are looking to the city and county to provide us an implementation plan to let us know what BMPs are implementing at this time exactly, and then a plan for future either enhancement of those BMPs or additional BMPs. At that point, it would be easier to try to estimate how much the cost would be for those actions.
Thank you. Anyone else comment? And then I'm going to kind of wrap it up.
I appreciate Dr. Young's comments that helped me focus back on both the value of the reference system, even if it's not perfect, and second, on looking at the table on pages 8 and 9 for what really applies. And as I reread that and I consider what the city has asked us to do, I look on page 9 at to what is being requested here, and it says submit a plan which describes BMPs being implemented and additional BMPs that will be implemented. And then I dug into the implementation section, and there's two things to keep in mind as I look at this. First of all, we do have enforcement actions against both one of the horse facilities and against the city. So there is a body of information that indicates very clearly that something needs to be done. I find this rather compelling, and it's on page 50 in the implementation plan about sanitary sewer systems, and it talks about what is already being required, and then it says at the end, just before it gets more specific, therefore this TMDL does not include additional measures to address these discharges. More details on these requirements are provided in the following discussion. So it is not axiomatic to me that full compliance with the cease and desist order and proper maintenance by the county of the permitted animal facilities may not provide most of, if not all, of the answer. There is language in there that says any additional BMPs that will be implemented. I guess I keep in mind one of my very first meetings in the comment of Dr. Young that what we are pursuing is the no regrets actions, those things that have to be done. And if they are sufficient, you get to go home. And if they are not sufficient, you are not done. But as I think has been said today, our interest is in cost effectiveness in those and effectiveness. And there is provisions, and I don't consider the additional monitoring requirements unreasonable, particularly because they focus you on those. So I'm going to support this. I think my questions have been resolved. I appreciate my colleague for focusing my mind in a fine way. Rather than being a little bit scattered. And I would remind the other board members that there is monitoring required, there is compliance with a cease and desist required, and at that point there's an assessment as to what's left to be done if I read this. And it is not axiomatic that they're either home free or that there are a lot of additional expensive things that must be done. I'm seeing the staff nodding. It would be really nice to have that on the record.
Yeah. Can you nod on the record?
Thank you. Yeah, if you were on video. Yes.
If I could,
Diane,
just add something briefly to give the board maybe a little bit of perspective. This is Diane White for the record. I was the lead staff on the two enforcement actions that are referenced here in the TMDL in terms of implementation, the Millwood Ranch and the City of Pacifica. And there is significant progress being made on those two fronts with the Millwood Ranch. The basis of the enforcement action was dumping of manure and waste piles and sediment into the creek at numerous locations around the property. Measures have been put in place. The manure has been pulled out. There's a creek restoration plan underway. We are moving forward on that. There's some remaining issues, but nonetheless, the issues in regard to manure management have been essentially addressed as part of our last inspection, at least that's what we observed. And then likewise on the front with the city, again, as a reminder, as part of that enforcement action, you authorized a significant supplemental environmental project for the lateral program there. The city very much recognizes the problems with laterals. They've been very aggressive on that front. They very much appreciate the money that's going into the private lateral program. Laterals are being inspected and replaced. Also, what they're particularly good at is in their response, and they have improved their responsiveness to these type of sanitary sewer overflow events. So they are out in the field very quickly. They're trying to contain the material as quickly as possible. And then in addition, this is one of our sewage treatment plants that has invested significant resources in technology in terms of what they're doing for treatment down at that plant as well. So we're quite pleased at the results and the outcome of the two enforcement actions. The monitoring data does not necessarily reflect the benefits of that, and so the additional monitoring, we may start to see the trends associated with these on-the-ground actions that have been taken.
Thank you. Quick comment from myself. You know, after you kind of work them over a little bit, you got to compliment them a little bit, too, to make put them down gently, I guess. I mean, really, Pacifica has come a long way. They've worked really hard. And I don't think there's a municipality amongst us here in the leadership or whatever that we're in fear of this every day. We're always in fear of this. And you take this community that's to the east of them is bordered by San Francisco SFPUC's beautiful watershed with thousands and thousands of critters in there, hopefully millions. And then you got GGNRA that they all creep over to. And then to their north, not to pick on Daly City, but then you have a big hill up there with a lot of liquid moving down that hill, whether it's laterals or not. It's coming down to the bottom of the watershed, which is the city of Pacifica or other cities along the coast. And then they're getting thousands and thousands of people that come to enjoy their beaches, too. And the homes that were built in that valley there are all along ditches and creeks also. So they have a multitude of complex issues to work with there. And so I'm not saying I'm disagreeing with staff, but I think, as the vice chair stated, and the monitoring is very important. As long as we don't bury these municipalities in cost projects, that's the key. I think we all want to do the right things, but how do we get to that point with the limited resources? And I don't care what anybody says. Municipalities are going to have limited resources. It's not like we have some golden goose out there that's going to come along and say, oh, go, let's go fix all these things. So I think it's a start, but they do have to get credit for a lot of work they've done so far. Because if you look back 10 years ago, 12 years ago, it was kind of a mess out there. And all of us have been in a mess, and we're working to kind of get move forward. So I think the fear is always with San Mateo County Stormwater and all of us that how in the devil we get through this, the details. And so hopefully by better monitoring, we can kind of detect where this is coming from. And, you know, they're the last area with, you know, animal confinement areas that they're all working on. But everyone wants to ride a horse. Everyone wants to walk their dog in the watersheds or in on the GGNRA land. So these are things we have to continue to work on, but I think we have to move forward and give them kind of directions. I'm hoping that's what we've come up with today, a conclusion of what they all have been through. Whenever you go through this process, it's lengthy and costly and scary. So I take staff's recommendation.
Well, and that's a good lead into, I think, how to summarize this. Essentially, what we're doing here is taking existing regulatory programs. We have the region-wide stormwater permit that has essentially generic requirements for all the 76 entities in that. We have the statewide collection system permit that, again, is more generic. We have our own confined animal facility general order that, again, is somewhat generic. What we're doing is trying to take those generic orders and focus down on an impaired water body and say that we're going to use those specifically for this water body, and we've tailored the implementation requirements to try to look at what are the specific issues that are impacting this water body and causing the bacteria exceedances, and use those existing regulatory mechanisms to focus that monitoring, as Chair Mueller says, that we can't continue to add on layers. But what we can do is by essentially saying this is where the rubber meets the road. There's an impaired water body, and we're using these existing permits to address that impairment And in so doing, we want to focus our energies, our efforts, to address the bacteria exceedance, rather than just say we're going to do a broad-based program that tries to address everything when we haven't addressed what that, or even identified what that quote-unquote everything is. Here we're looking at the bacteria exceedances. So really, in our minds, we are relying heavily, as staff says, on the, as it says in Table 4, 741-4, the best management practices being implemented and additional practices that will be implemented. And I heard the planning director say that they have recently modified. He said, we've recently developed. We're starting our private sewer lateral program. We'll shortly initiate diversion. So a lot of this is just getting going. Right now, the monitoring we have demonstrates that there's problems. We hope that this work that the city is doing, that's recently getting going, is going to address the problem. The fact is that the monitoring to date hasn't been specific enough to really get us to be able to drill down. And that's where the monitoring is, where we want it to go. And that's why we do have the requirement for a specific water quality monitoring plan for the watershed to better characterize that contribution, to focus down. And then based on that, we do have the requirement saying if waste load allocations are not being achieved, submit a plan. As part of that plan, we would fully expect the city and the county to say, look, this is everything we've been doing. It hasn't achieved. Do you have any other ideas on what we can do? And pitch it. And additionally, in Section 7418, we do have the adaptive implementation where essentially we're tasking ourselves to review the TMDL to incorporate any new local reference system studies, any new monitoring, and see what can we do differently as we move forward. So we want this to be a living document. We want to make sure that we're at one level addressing the impairment, but we're using our existing mechanisms to get there based on what we know or are going to learn through further monitoring. So I would say no, we don't feel that this is overly conservative, that we do have a way to get new information and moving forward address the monitoring using our existing programs. So with that, I'd recommend adoption of the resolution, which essentially establishes this basin plan amendment to incorporate the TMDL.
Vice Chair.
Move approval.
I'll second that.
It's been moved and seconded by numerous. Any further discussion?
I would like to ask a question. Is there a sewer line current over there along the shore in that area?
Well, Pacific is set up with a number of watersheds that are separated by hills. So essentially, the sewer lines come down close to the ocean, hit a pump station, and then they're all pumped from north and south to one central treatment plant in Pacifica. The treatment plant is not in this specific watershed, so it comes down to the pump station and then is pumped north.
Well, I'm asking this question for a specific reason. It is possible the shoreline current can carry the pollution from other sources into this region, which you are addressing over here at Pacifica Beach. Although they are not responsible, it current brought from other source. It's possible from San Francisco or maybe from Half Moon Bay.
I got a call for the question.
Yeah. Well, I would say that we wouldn't expect to see that based on where the sampling has been done, that it's basically been done not only in the creek but right at the mouth of the creek, and then trying to make the connection that this is something that's coming from this watershed. So we wouldn't expect to see a significant contribution from other watersheds.
Okay, so you have a series of steps to them to implement and reach the goal, what you have set over here, and you have given them time and adaptability. If they're trying the best management practices, everything, you have the leeway for them, Mana City, Mana, what kind of time frame you have over here? I didn't read the whole document. I'm still unaware over here.
Well, they're required to give us the implementation plan, as we said, as soon as possible, but not later than 2014. Yeah. And then this is also set up to run with the regional stormwater permit, because that's essentially the implementation action would be put into our next reissuance of that regional permit, which is also 2014.
Yeah, hopefully that's when we give them recognition for doing good work. We normally fine them one week and give them a plaque the next.
So we're trying to make this run with existing permits.
So thank you. Call for a roll call vote, please, Mary. Oh, Shalom.
Aye.
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 Aye. That concludes this item. I think this brings our meeting to closure.
There's no closed session, so.
Right. I'd like to close the meeting in honor, not in memory, of honor of Shalom Board Member Elihu, who's been our dear friend.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
See you in December.